Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brew-Built X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brew-Built Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brew-Built line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brew-Built X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brew-Built conicals. You can trust Brew-Built with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brew-Built at morebeer.com.
Sunday night, 5 o'clock rolls around. What's that sound? The voice of the brewing underground. I rush home. What's with the Abacast stream? Goddamn, it's almost time. Why don't you work? Fucking thing, it's 5:02. I reboot, ass at iTunes. I hope Justin made the free FM commute. I'm on, thank God, not a moment too soon. Holy shit, I just got booted out of the chat room. I won't rack, motherfucker, when you do, you're risking 0-2. I'll hail the bubble, Jay-Z. Do like we told you, do what you say. Well, okay, at least mostly, and hit that fucking whirlpool, Viger roast. Sometimes I don't, and I won't bitch more than a little bitch. Vile of that sweet shit that likes life and damn, my useful not proven. Fucking booth being rude. Boom, that goes the blow off through it. Fuck this old chat room. I want out. Justin Chef, that goes my chocolate stout. And I never want to hear the word run high. Skip about. I give up. 50G, why don't you push eject me? I'm screaming Gucci when D pushes me off the screen. Jamil, JP, Johnny G, I can't think. But then I hear Doc's little voice in my head screaming, drink, motherfucker, drink, motherfucker, drink. The B.A.
Could be going for a silver or gold.
The B.A.
But do my bench warm or cold?
The B.A.
Crew, get unrefined.
The Brewing Network.
Life saved 5 gallons at a time.
The B.A.
Could be going for a silver or gold.
The B.A.
No, the bench warm or cold.
The B.A.
Crew, get unrefined.
The Brewing Network.
Life saved 5 gallons at a time.
I need some TBN bark. What a shock, the Sony's horn in stock. Tick tock, the visa's unlocked. Sean, knock, knock, doc. Can you walk the walk? Pull out an airlock. A cock in his world flock. There's no my box. Into the mash goes a butt crack. Like a true breeder. It's type of pale ale, my man, Boogita. Flew for you beer nerds. That's how it's you just heard. The only man I know whose name is a cuss word. Come hang with James. I'm a jest and haggardy. And no one understands a word Daniela says. Either biscuit, the pit bull, or code right in full. We'll sniff your crack if you got the Jane hat. Do line itself, where's my hat? Go tip how Matt Bed trans is a little fat. And lunch meet some grass ass. And what about Crouch Rock? He's more than just down the block. And then there's homegrown hops. He's missing just like us.
No, I don't know. I can't see. I can't see. But then I hear Doc's little voice in my ear.
Screaming, who's gonna be out in the desert with me?
The B.N. Could be going for a silver or gold.
The B.N.
But do my bench warm or cold?
The B.N.
Crew, get unrefined.
The Brewing Network.
I see. 5 gallons at a time.
The B.N.
Could be going for a silver or gold.
The B.N.
You don't know the pitch warm or cold.
The B.N.
Crew, get unrefined.
The Brewing Network.
I say 5 gallons at a time.
Drink, drink, motherfucker, drink, motherfucker.
I could have mixed it with chocolate and vagina. It still wouldn't help.
Drink!
Home brewers. Craft brewers. Beer lovers. Beer drinkers.
Get ready for an all-new experience in information exchange and beer culture.
Your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers from around the globe
right to your home.
You're not just listening to broadcasters. It's the Brewcasters
on the Brewing Network.
That's right, folks. Welcome to the Brewing Network Sunday Brewcast, a very special show we have for you today for a couple of reasons. Homebrewing royalty, Denny Kahn, is with us today, Daniela.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, it's going to be pretty fantastic. I spoke to the man earlier today, and I met him in Orlando, actually, at the National Homebrewers Conference, and he's just a real good dude, and one of these just well-respected homebrewing guys around the whole biz.
I'm getting questions already for him.
Are you really?
Mm-hmm.
Good. I like that. And that brings me to my next point. The other special thing about this show, it's a very odd format for us today, I got to say. First time the Brewing Network has been done, Danielle and I are flying solo.
We are.
There's nobody else in the studio. We got Denny lined up to phone in. We're going to get a hold of him at just about 5:30. Doc is not in the studio. JP's not in the studio. Jameel's not in the studio. Nobody's here.
Neither is John.
No John. Nothing.
You, me, and I just blew up Travis, so he's around.
Travis is ready to go. So we got a couple of changes. It's going to be an interesting show in that respect. Basically, everyone was just real busy. Had a lot of family things going on this week. Doc had to trade off either this week or next week, and we got the brothers White coming in for the Yeasty show, the White Labs Yeast show next week, and he wanted to be here for that because I think he missed the last one, or he missed the last big show he wanted to be at. So Doc will be back with us next week. Jameel had some family plans going on, so we said, all right, okay, everybody, I see where your commitment lies. We'll take care of business.
All right, we are.
So no big deal. We're gonna, like I said, we got Denny coming in at 5:30. We're gonna be calling him up, get him on the phone, and then he's gonna be doing the Batch Sparge show with us, among other things. Mm. I did talk to Denny earlier, and we decided that we're gonna go ahead and throw in some other techniques too, and try to spread things out because it'd be a waste of a Denny appearance if we just covered batch sparging, especially since it's fairly simple.
Is it?
Yeah, well, it is, although there's lots of questions and things to tackle that go with batch sparging, so I don't think it's going to go quite as quick as Denny expects it will. But we've got some other things lined up to do there, too.
Mm. I'm even going to pay attention today.
Hey,
it's
that's
Denny.
Yeah, now you have to. So, chat room, you got to cut Danielle a little bit of slack because she's not just running the chat for you today. She's co-hosting the show. Officially, she's the co-host. There's nobody else to back her up.
Finally, so, my promotion.
Yeah, that's right. So if you don't pay attention today, Danielle, then we're all in trouble because I don't pay attention either. So somebody has to pay attention.
It's a good thing I've been drinking for 2 hours already.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for this yummy Schwartz beer, by the way.
Thirsty Bear Brewing Company sent me home from the FM show with three growlers, half full each because we had a few at the we had a couple little ones at the show. But three, you know, pretty much full growlers of beer. I got their IPA, I got their Schwartz beer, and I got their wheat beer, which you can drink when the Schwartz beer's done.
They'll do the trick for me.
Yeah. Hey, Bub, you're on the line with the Brewcasters. What's happening?
I hear you need an in-studio drunk.
We always do, Boob. Yeah.
Hi,
absolutely.
Boob.
Hey, how's it going, Danielle?
Great. How are you doing?
Oh, about average.
I'm glad you're calling in already because it segues to my next point that I wanted to mention to everybody at home. Well, I just the thing that's going to make this batch sparge show work is you folks at home. If you got questions about the all grain process, about sparging, about brewing basics, this is the show to get them in, and we need your help because, like I said, we don't have the co-hosts in here, so we really need you all to participate. Call in. The number, of course, is 888-401-BEER. It's simple. 888-401-BEER. It's free of charge. Call in. You can also Skype us. Now, I will have Denny on the Skype, and I haven't really figured out this whole conference call thing yet, Boob.
Jesus.
But it's a good show to figure it out, right? So go ahead and try to Skype, and I guess as long as I don't dump Denny, then we'll try to get people on there, too. But the 800 number, once we get Denny on, is going to be your best bet. And, of course, you can join the chat room and ask all the questions you have, too. Are you already primed and ready to be the drunk of the week, Boob?
Well, I'm not ready for Drunk of the Week right now, but yes, I'm primed.
You're primed, okay.
I've had in-laws over and whatnot, and you know, you gotta drink when you got the in-laws over.
Are they there now?
Yeah, my father-in-law's sitting on the couch right next to me.
Oh, perfect. And are they drinkers?
Not so much.
Is that right?
I have a beer. They did enjoy the Maybach, though.
Okay.
My in-law did. My mother-in-law, I think she drinks water.
Do they think that you're kind of an alcoholic douchebag?
I'm pretty sure they think I'm a douchebag.
And yeah.
Guessing if I'm an alcoholic, I'm going for yeah.
See, I tell you what, Daniela's parents are awesome because her dad drinks.
Because they're German.
Exactly. And what else do I got to say? Her dad drinks more than I do, most likely. And it's always good fun. So I don't have to worry about that whole like naughty in-law thing, you know?
No, you're good.
Yeah, they're cool. Yeah. They're cool. All right, Bub. Well, hey, what are they, in town for a week or so?
Yeah, they're going home tomorrow. They're it's coming to see family and whatnot. So
you got the headphones on, or am I broadcasting? Yeah,
he can't hear me.
No,
he can't hear you.
Has it been a big pain in the ass?
No, actually, they've been staying at my brother-in-law's house most of the time. So it's like two nights. Yeah, so
two nights with you guys. Do you get along with them in general?
Yeah.
See, this is always a great topic to me because there's the whole cliche about in-laws, but so I like to find out who actually follows the cliche and who doesn't. I've certainly met my fair share of people who can't stand it when the in-laws come to town. You know.
Well, I don't know if I actually like them. I'm usually drunk when they're around, so.
So
like if I was sober, I might not like them.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But right, you know, in general, you're thinking they're great because you don't know the difference.
Sure, right.
That's fair enough. I guess I would do the same thing if I had to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if the whole in-law thing applies. So far, they seem to like me, and I seem to be drunk enough to not care.
Fair enough. All right, Boob. Well, keep the calls coming then, because we need the questions for Denny, and it's going to be a good show. I'm excited about it.
All right. Have a good show.
All right, brother.
And call if you need any drunk of the week.
We always do. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
There you go. So Bub setting the example. Feel free to 888-401-BEER is the number. Feel free to call in. Get your questions ready for Denny. You don't want this guy to go by without having gotten a little access to his brain, because he knows a lot of stuff. And if you got any questions about things, get him ready. Denny's the guy to ask. Okay, I do need to announce, for those of you who don't use the forum, the web store has been up for a week.
Yay.
Now. It went up, I think, on Monday, I think it was. It was Sunday, either late Sunday night or Monday, I can't remember. But it went up, and we're almost sold out already. So I do apologize if you wait for all your Brewing Network information for the Sunday show archive, because now you're getting it late, and we're almost sold out already. Yet another reason to join the Brewing Network forum. Because it was posted up there instantly as soon as the store went up. And if you use the forum regularly, you would have known and found that our shirts were on sale and ready to go. For those of you who have purchased already, and there's quite a few of you, we really appreciate that. You're making things keep moving around here, and thank you for that. And even in light of the merchandise being on sale, some people bought a shirt and then hit the donate button after that.
Oh, really?
Can you believe that?
Oh, that's awesome.
There's some really cool people out there, and we appreciate that. All that does help to pay the bandwidth and everything else. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You've heard us say all this before, but just giving a big appreciation. If your size shirt is not in the store, fear not. Because everybody has been so kind, we are able to order new shirts.
Beautiful.
So I'll be ordering them on Monday. I spoke to the people on Friday, and they're just a little bit backed up. So I'll be putting in the order officially on Monday and hopefully get them pretty quick.
Yeah, I want to take the chance and thank the listener who sent a check. He took the chance and took my second place in the competition for sending a check to us,
yeah,
to the BN, and that was just awesome.
He just wrote in like a congratulations,
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, he did. He said congratulations. And
by the way, here's a check.
Here's a check for the BN. He told me not to give it to you, but you stole it from me. I don't know how you do it, but you can.
I stole it. Put it right into the account. So that was very cool, and thanks everybody for that. So if you don't have your size shirt in there, just hang in there. Hopefully this week I'll be putting up some new shirts. And, of course, we've got some other merch in mind, too.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the thongs.
Yeah, I know.
Everyone wants Brewing Network thongs.
They're going to be hot.
Not for the dudes.
You can model this time, by the way.
Yeah, I'll be the thong model. We're sure to sell several thongs that way. Okay. As far as keeping up on things, I want to make this announcement, too. A lot of you signed up for the Brewing Network newsletter.
Yes.
Ages ago. Probably been 6 months since I've sent out a Brewing Network newsletter. But that's okay, because there was a lot of problems with the old newsletter, and it was a big pain in the arse. And I've revamped it and actually turned it into a pretty a cool little newsletter we got going now. Would you not agree, Daniela?
Oh, my gosh.
It's
actually
pretty good, right?
I have to give you props.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the first time ever.
I guess for the first time ever,
thank
yes.
you. Okay.
It's pretty damn sweet.
It's a great little newsletter, and it's going to keep you up to date. Right now, it's scheduled to be put out once a month, and it's going to keep you up on the shows, everything that everyone's always asking to be kept up on. Plus, we're adding extra features and articles to it. It's actually turning out more to be an e-zine than it is a newsletter. And I know e-zine because I'm turning into a computer dork every day around here, and I found that there are these things called e-zines, which are just magazines, and that's our new newsletter looks more like an e-zine, actually. So lots of features getting put in there. You're going to want to sign up for our newsletter. If you haven't signed up for it yet, just go to the button. It says newsletter right there. If you have signed up for it, I know you've been waiting on it, guys. It's coming out this week. I'm nearly done with it. We'll be beta testing it tomorrow and sending out the final version of it next week, and that's going to keep you up to date on everything. So if you only listen on Sundays and you're afraid of the forum because there's a bunch of freaks in there, and I can kind of agree with you there, then just sign up for our newsletter, and that's going to keep you up to date on upcoming things like store openings and different inside information. I don't want to tell you too much about it. Just sign up for it. Get it, and you'll be pleasantly surprised, I'm sure of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a good deal. All right, let's do some quick feedback. I got a lot of things this week, but not too many specific things. Lots of thanks that we get, and I always appreciate those. I just don't want to read them every show. I don't want people to get tired of hearing the BN praise. It's cool stuff we get. But I do always like to read Indian Beer Geeks feedback. And he seems to be sending us one a week now, and I really like that, because he's kind of keeping us up to date about what's happening in India, where he's the only home brewer. He feels like he's the only home brewer on the planet.
Where in India is he exactly? Do we know that?
I don't know. Unless he said it in maybe his first email, we'll have to go back and check. Mm-hmm. But he's a cool guy. I like the guy. He sent us a lot of emails just about different things. He made a big Justin's mistake last week, which we read, and anyway, he sent us another one this week. He wanted to say, hey, congratulations on the BN winning so many medals and a bronze certificate, he included, which,
really?
Which I appreciate, because, of course, he's talking about my certificate from the competition.
We're still proud of you, Justin.
Thank you. And so is Indian Beer Geek, India Beer Geek. I appreciate that. Daniela, he says, you are just great.
Oh.
Yeah. Congratulations to you, he says. All this brewing, and I don't seem to get anywhere, but that's okay. What I can't understand is why your skills don't rub off on Justin. Yeah, and a good question.
It is a good question.
Yeah. He says, I wish we had homebrew competitions here so that I could get feedback on the mongrels that I keep brewing. Now I've decided to stick to styles so that I can brew a winner. I'm sure Justin and I are going to win big time at the NHC someday. He says. And that, my friend, I'm with you. I'll tell you what. That's what I'm saying right now. I'm making the prediction along with Indian Beer Geek right now that that 1 year it's going to belong to him and I. And we're sending medals home to India and home to Pacheco, which are very similar little territories.
They might be, actually.
Because they're sort of in the middle of nowhere. And so he's getting his medals, and so am I. One day, we're going to take the NHC by storm.
I'm sure they will go a medal to India eventually.
Yes. He also wants Push to know, hey, by the way, 5 o'clock was just great. You know, the new Brewing Network song.
Mm-hmm.
Said, it's really nice to see the BN community giving something back. Way to go. Cheers to Push and Sven.
What a nice guy.
Word has it Sven's already at work on other songs for us. Pretty good, huh?
Mm-hmm. I haven't even understood the first one yet, so.
Yeah. Now, he had some questions for Doc, but Doc's not here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to bother try to answer them.
Don't worry about it.
But maybe I'll pass them on to Denny when we get him on the line. It's going to be only a few minutes before we get him on here anyway, so I'll save that. And that was our main bit of feedback that was good to read this week. Now, a very special introduction and something else that's changed the format of this show and every show hereafter. Daniela now has her own segment.
Yay.
On the show. You guys, a long time ago, you know, first of all, she didn't have a microphone for the longest time, and the folks at home all asked for Daniela to have a microphone, and we did that. And now we're even expanding the role of Daniela here on the Brewing Network because she's proven herself to be much higher quality than the rest of us.
And sometimes I'm just the only co-host around.
Yeah. So beginning this week and now every week, introducing for the first time ever our new segment, Daniela's World, Vigorously.
Oh, what a nice name you found.
What is up this week on Daniela's World, Vigorously?
Well, this week I'm bringing you drinking games from all over the world. So I know that you guys in the U.S. play some of the drinking games. I've participated in something called Three Men, which totally fucked me up. I've participated in Quartering, or however that is called.
Quarters,
yeah. Which I totally suck at, too.
Yeah.
So I brought a few other games to you, and maybe you can tell me if you guys know them here or not.
Okay.
First one is called The Ring of Fire.
Okay. Is that anything like chlamydia?
No.
Okay.
So it doesn't hurt when you pee.
Okay.
So what you need for this game is you need cards from 7 to ace.
Okay.
But you only keep 1 7. And then you put the cards on a stack face down and you draw cards like you're sitting in a circle and you draw the cards.
Okay.
The cards have different meanings.
Sure.
The 8 means the person next to you drinks. The 9 means the person 2 next to you drinks. The 10 means person 3 next to you drinks and so on.
Okay.
The 7, the only 7 in the game means you can go pee. So there's only one pee break during the game. That's why it's the Ring of Fire, probably.
Yeah, because in that case, it does burn when you pee.
It probably
does. You jump the gun there.
So I've played this game myself. It's a lot of fun. It's pretty fast, and you get totally fucking hammered after a short time only.
Oh, okay.
Because you drink all the time. It's so fast.
And this is a German drinking game.
We play it in Germany frequently, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what else you got?
The next game is called Condom Shaking. What you need for that game is 1 condom and 2 dice.
Okay.
And how it goes, you take the condom, you put the dice in the condom, you blow up the condom, and then you start shaking the condom.
Okay.
The 2 dice...
Is it a new condom, or it has to be a... It's not a... I don't know what you people do in Germany.
It can totally be a new condom.
Okay.
And the more you blow it up, the funnier it is because it's going to burst eventually through the shaking. So whoever bursts the condom in the end has to do something totally weird. We always come up with funny things like this person has to sit naked then for the rest of the night.
Whoa.
Or whatever.
Okay.
So you take the condom, you shake the dice, and then the dice will show 2 numbers, right?
Okay.
For example, the dice show a 4 and a 3, so you have a 43. So the person next to you needs to roll something that's higher than a 43.
Okay.
If the person doesn't accomplish that, the person needs to drink. If the person beats you, you're drinking.
Okay.
Really makes you drunk too.
Okay.
It's a fun game as well.
A high skill game involving condoms and ice. dice, rather. Condoms and ice was a totally different game.
The next game I have is Chihuahua.
Chihuahua.
Yeah. Do you guys play that here?
No.
You don't?
I've never heard of it.
Really?
All I know is that it's a little yippy dog that nobody likes.
Yeah, and it's also the background that the website gave to me where I found that game is that the Indians here in the U.S., their chief on the boat was called a Chihuahua.
Okay.
So he was the one to give the orders.
Okay.
That game goes like this. You don't need anything for that game, basically. You just need like 8 people or so sitting in a circle. So the first person yells out Chihuahua and then a name. So for example, Chihuahua Justin, and you will be the Chihuahua. The person to your left and the person to your right need to start pedaling like crazy in the air, like air pedaling. Okay. If they don't do it, then they have to drink. If somebody starts pedaling and it's not his turn, he has to drink.
Okay.
And then like after 30 seconds, you yell out the next Chihuahua. Chihuahua Travis, for example, and then he is the Chihuahua.
I see.
Very fast and fucks you up quickly.
Okay.
Looks like.
A lot of frat partying going on in Germany.
It is, I know.
Is what it sounds like. Okay.
The last game I have for a group, for bigger people, for groups of bigger people is LSD.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a whole different sort of thing here.
What you need is a beer and 2 glasses and at least 8 people to play it. You form 2 teams out of those 8 people and you give the number of beers according to the number of members in the team, right?
Okay.
So, for example, 4-4, so you give 4 beers to each team.
Okay.
Then you put define an end and an end and a starting point. You put a coin to the end and the starting point. You line up the teams. First teammate has to chuck the beer, run to the end point, spin himself in a 360-degree circle 5 times and run back. So it goes like that with all 4 team members, and everybody has to chuck the beer.
Wow.
It's almost impossible, actually, after spinning 5 times to run back.
And dangerous, even.
Why?
A lot of cracked heads.
Yeah, that's true.
Falling over. You're doing this outside?
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, on grass.
So give the disclaimer.
Yeah.
Do it responsibly.
On grass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not the cousin, but on a field of grass.
Right.
Yeah.
German drinking games.
Okay, that is Daniela's World Vigorously. Now, what is the point of Daniela's World Vigorously each week? What are we looking for out of this segment?
International things related to beer somehow, news, whatever we do with beers, culture, traditions.
Okay.
Any random things. I'm allowed to bring whatever.
That's right. We find that people accuse us very often of being too regional, even though we're a global show.
Yeah.
So Daniela's World Vigorously is intended to broaden the horizons of everybody. All her reports will be from outside of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to future segments.
You want to know one thing, how you can get through a chick flick with your girlfriend?
Yeah. Is this a German?
It is.
Okay.
They bring it with Casablanca as an example. You know the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's terribly love. So you don't want to watch it as a guy.
No.
So what they do is every time Humphrey Bogart drinks a whiskey, they drink it too.
Ah.
Yeah. So you get through that movie.
Okay. So you can do that with other movies.
Yeah, like Titanic. If Leonardo DiCaprio is drowning, you just drown yourself in beer.
Yeah. Or like Chocolat. Every time they mention chocolate,
exactly,
you have to drink.
Yeah. So you can even offer to your girlfriend to watch a chick flick and you're going to be still happy.
Now, is she going to be happy, though, in the end? Because, like, she wants to sit and do the cuddle thing, like watch the stupid movie, and you're just getting hammered.
Does that matter to you at this point, then?
Not to me, but I'm worried about others.
I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, good advice. That's how you make it through a chick flick. Find something to drink during the episode. That's also how you make it through a week with your in-laws. Every time your in-law says, "Hey, do something," you drink. Right? Like, whatever it is that they say. Like, there's always something, right?
Whatever it is that they say.
Whatever they complain about.
You drink.
Why are you always so retarded? You know, whatever it is that they complain about, you have a drink, right?
Good idea.
That would work. Okay. It's going to be the Batch Sparge Show. When we come back, we're going to get Denny Kahn on the horn with us and get right down to business here, okay? So get your questions ready, 888-401-BEER.
You're listening to The Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
I'm on. Thank God, not a moment too soon. There's no one in the room, right?
No.
All right. That's a really hard line.
You wrote it.
What's with the Abacast dream? God damn it. Oh, these are really hard. I'm just going to have to do this a bunch of times. Who wrote this shit? You know what? Go ahead and start me over. And just trash that whole tape. Hit that fucking whirlpool vigorously. Holy shit. I need some air. Damn, my yeast will not proof in my... Oh my God, I'm so white.
Okay.
Proof in fucking boobs being rude and my kid pulled the leg out to say that a whole lot faster. This whole chat room I want now, Justin. Shit, that's a lot of words. 50G, why don't you push eject me? I'm screaming Gucci when D pushes me off the screen. Ow. I'm screaming Gucci when D pushes me off the screen. Jum, blah, blah. That's the end of that. Then we're off into the pseudo chorus. Shit, I just got booted out of the chat room. I was so in the groove on the last one. That was crap. Holy shit, I just got booted out of the fucking chat room.
Did you have to laugh?
Sweet shit that likes life and aerobic. Damn, play you still not proof and I'm out of air. Doc's little voice in my ear screaming, I realize that I'm missing two whole bars of lyrics. Damn, my yeast will not proof and fucking boobs being rude, my kid. That one's impossible. Think I can't think, but then I hear Doc's little voice in my ear. This is where it just goes, falls apart. I don't know how this worked in my head. Motherfucker, drink!
Drink! Aw, man, that always kind of irked me. You're this guy like, drink!
That part's easy. It's how do I fit all that other crap in there? Alright, that's probably good enough for now. Oh, that's funny. Is that you? Oh, that's me.
Shit.
I'm throwing down an angry rap song. Oh, what time is it? Probably within the next 20 minutes. I love you, sweetie. Okay, running out of time.
Just got booted out of the chat room. That's the gay version. Okay, don't even think about putting that on there. This is just pathetic, isn't it? Look at the two jerk-offs. Too bad I don't have like a good ripping fart right now or something. Wait, I'm actually touching cloth. Doc's little voice in my head screaming! Are you going to have to burn him, man? Hail JP. It really sounds like I'm on the pot, doesn't it?
What?
I think it does. Oh, let's just spin, take a crap. I'm out.
What I'm hoping for with these podcasts that we get, especially like our podcast, is it opens the eyes to the American listener to other attitudes, other opinions, other ideas, and we'll see changes as a result of that, I think, down the line. I think this is going to be a great thing for helping to bring Americans into the world sphere.
The Brewing Network, saving your life.
One beer at a time.
Oi, 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 oi,
Well, all right. You tune into the Brewcaster Show right here on the Brewing Network. 888-401-BEER is the number if you have any questions for our guest, Denny Kahn. Or you can also join the chat room and speak to Daniela directly in there and get your questions ready. I've already got several come through to me, so I'm happy to see that. But we always like to take your phone calls, and the more questions, the merrier, because we can get all this information out. Mr. Denny Kahn, you're on the air with the Brewcasters. How are you, sir?
Hey, Justin. I'm great today. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How'd your brew go this morning?
Hit all the numbers just like always on that particular beer.
Is that right?
That's right, man. I've brewed that one so many times, I can't miss. I can't sit in my sleep.
You just can't go wrong?
It's rye IPA, you know? I can sleepwalk through it.
Denny's famous rye IPA. Denny, you are actually the exact opposite of me. While Denny hits every single number he wants to, I can't seem to find one that I can nail down. So a little more help for me out of this show, I'm hoping, Denny.
It's all up to you, man.
That was a nice way of saying you're still helpless, but I'll do my best.
That's exactly right, buddy.
Now, I met Denny at the NHC in Orlando this year, and really helpful and a nice guy. Not only was he willing to answer brew questions for us there, but you helped us out with our audio, which was pretty cool, too. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, man, whatever I can do to help.
Is that your profession? Are you, when you're not homebrewing, you're an audio engineer?
Yeah, I'm the head engineer at a big performing arts center. I have my own recording studio, which is what allows me so much time to participate in online things, because I have a lot of time to kill between sessions, and
sure.
I've got a T1 connection.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's a good deal. All right, we might be sending all our Brewing Network production up to Denny from now on.
I'm ready, man.
Since you got all that free time.
Yeah, that's right. Bring it on.
Well, Denny, not everybody knows you, which comes as a surprise because you're a pretty famous fellow around the homebrew circles. I want to talk a little bit about your homebrewing history so that those of us who haven't heard of you and haven't gotten to share information with you on the many forums that you participate in, let's get a little background about you. How long ago did you start homebrewing?
Oh, man, about 8.5 years ago, the classic situation of my wife bought me the kit for Christmas. I've been cooking as a hobby for about 40 years, and I was doing that, but she and I have different schedules, so it's kind of hard to coordinate anything there. And living in the Northwest, we both had a real appreciation for good beer. Plus, my business partner in the studio had already started brewing and had gotten me real interested in it, so that was about all that I needed.
Okay. Well, hey, that's a good start. I know a lot of people got in with the wives or girlfriends' homebrewing kit purchase. We got to thank them right now. Take a moment to thank the wives and girlfriends for getting us into this hobby. Okay. And you went just nuts right when you got into it?
It's like my kit was one from a place called Liberty Brewing Supply up in Seattle. I'm sitting here looking at the box. I still have it out here in my garage brewery where I'm sitting.
Okay.
I made a pale ale, came with grains to steep, the whole thing, and it turned out like so well the first time that I was immediately hooked and went on from there, did maybe half a dozen extract brews, a couple partial mash, and then got into all grain that.
Oh, beautiful. And so you say your first batch went so well. Did you have any any total shit in between your first and say now? Any big mess ups?
You're cutting out there, Justin. Oh.
Did you have any big mess ups after your first great batch there?
Not immediately, but in the 258 intervening batches, there have been a few that haven't been everything I would hope they would be.
Okay, fair enough. Now, are you one of these competition brewers? Do you like to get into a lot of the competitions?
I enjoy competitions, but I'm really lazy, and getting into a competition involves bottling beer and filling out forms and getting that beer to someplace, somewhere or another, and I'm too lazy to do that.
Yeah.
There's a competition up in Corvallis, north of here, called the Heart of the Valley. I've entered there every year since I've started homebrewing, and I've come home with either a third or second place for my alt beer every year in that competition, every year since. So I'm determined to keep doing it till I can come home with a blue.
Wow.
But that's the only one that I enter, really. I like to judge in a lot of competitions, just judged in our local county fair competition the other day. But
okay.
You know, that's about it, man, you know.
Are you a BJCP certified judge?
Yeah, I just got my national certification in the middle of July.
Okay.
I'm one of the team of people who grades the BJCP test, too, which keeps you on your toes, man. You know, you get some answers that come in, and you go, whoa, I've never heard that, and suddenly it's research time.
Yeah. Yeah, so you got to stay on top of it.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I mean, it's really cool. It's not just like when you're grading the tests, you're judging somebody else. You're actually going through a learning experience yourself.
Right. Right. And that's kind of the great thing that people talk about with the competitions in general is the learning experience. And certainly as a judge, you know, getting to taste new things like that, I can see what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think competitions are a great way for people to, if you think you're having problems with your beer, it's a great way to get some feedback on that. And if you think you've made a really great beer, then it's a really good way to get some feedback on that.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Now, I think that you're a man after my own heart when you said already that you're a lazy, kind of back-to-basics type of brewer. And I'm telling you, that's right up my alley, man, because I'm a lazy guy, but I love to brew good beer. You see what I'm saying here?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do.
So I like that that's your deal.
Well, it is, you know, and that's pretty much my whole philosophy about, my motto when I brew is I want to make the best beer possible with the least effort possible while I have the most fun possible.
Okay, I gotcha. And that's kind of that's the best philosophy you could have.
Well, it is, and everybody has different ways to go about that. Me, I'm not like the kind of guy who gets into like having a huge brewing system and, you know, building equipment. I know there's a lot of guys that, you know, building the equipment is as important as the brewing. That's not where I'm at. I guess maybe that comes from my 40 years of cooking for a hobby. I just want to get what I need to get it done and then get into the process itself. Because it's really the process that I enjoy and not necessarily the equipment is with it.
Right, absolutely. And I think that's a great, kind of a great way to look at it. And not only the process, but you want the easiest way to get that product out in the end, too, you know.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and that's not to say you cut corners, you know, details that need to be attended to.
Yeah.
But you learn what counts and the easiest and best way to go about things.
Okay.
And that's something everybody picks up through experience, man, you know. And that's one thing that I find that the online discussion forums are great for is because everybody gets to share their experiences and kind of accelerate that learning process for everybody else because you don't have to run across it all yourself. Chances are there's somebody else who's already tried something you're thinking about and they can tell you about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's kind of why we do this whole show because the chances are somebody else already knows the answer.
Right on, man. That's very true.
All right, Denny, here's what I'm going to do. I'm having a little bit of technical trouble with your phone call here, and
okay.
I think we might be using up a little too much bandwidth for some reason. The bandwidth we have fluctuates, so I'm hoping that's kind of the problem. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to hang up on you here, and I'm going to try to get you on a landline.
Sounds good, man.
So just give us a second.
I'm a high bandwidth kind of guy.
Okay, yeah, exactly. So I know a lot of our listeners are getting dropped out here, and I'm wondering what's going on. So just give us a couple minutes. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to call Denny Kahn on the landline and see if we can't get a better connection. And we'll be right back right here on the Brewing Network Batch Sparge Show with Denny Kahn.
B-double-E-double-R-U-N, Baron. B-double-E-double-R-U-N, Baron. All we need is a 10 and a 5 or a car and a key.
All right, you're back with the Brewcasters. Trying to clear up the connection here, make sure that everybody can get the most out of Denny Kahn. Sorry about having to take the quick break there, but we just want to make sure that the man sounds clear and we can get all that information out. So let's try him on the landline here. Denny, you with us?
I am here, Justin.
Okay. Well, I tell you, it makes you sound like a robot, but might be clearer.
We'll hope.
You know I'm not a robot.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think we're going to give this a try. We'll do this segment with you on the landline. When we take a break, we might put you back to Skype because the bandwidth tends to fluctuate. And just want to get the most. It's too bad you live in Oregon. You should have moved down here just for the show, Denny.
Yeah, I don't think it's too bad I live in Oregon, Justin. You should see it. It's beautiful here today, mid-80s. I was sitting down in my river earlier this afternoon.
Yeah.
I think it's too bad you're not here.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe we should have moved up there.
That's right.
Well, I got tons of questions in front of me already for you from our listeners. They came in even before we started the show. It was pretty amazing.
I'm scared to death, but let's go for it, buddy.
So the first question everyone wants to know is, why haven't you written a book yet, Denny?
Because I'm a one-trick pony. you know, I have pretty much dispensed all the info that I really have on the discussion groups, and I'm talking to people and doing it that way. And when you have people like John Palmer and Greg Noonan and Stan Hieronymus and guys like that. I mean, I'm sitting here in front of my brewing library, Ray Daniels, you know, looking at all these books. I just don't know what I could possibly contribute to that.
Yeah, that's it's a modest thing to say. I guess you're right. It is hard to, when you're amongst so many great things, you kind of feel like, am I going to create something that great too?
But yeah, I was honored that John Palmer asked me to contribute a little bit of info for the batch sparging section on his book. So, you know, I felt like I was doing a little bit. But, man, you know, that guy is so great that, you know, I don't need to write a book.
Well, but Danny, telling by the feedback that we got here about you and by how people are excited about you, you might be right up there, dude.
Well, you know, If I can come up with something new and exciting and interesting to write about, I have no qualms with it. But if all I can do is rehash the same stuff that other people have already written so well about, I'll pass until I can do something really exciting.
Well, what a great philosophy.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do Boo Like a Hippie.
You know what? I'd buy that in a second. I'd buy two copies, Denny. That's a good idea. All right. Well, our official topic of today's show, as everybody knows, is going to be batch sparging. And a lot of people, Denny, I did a show a couple of weeks ago about my disastrous foray into all-grain brewing, which has just begun. And a lot of people mentioned that I should, for one, that I should call Denny. And, and two, that I should, you know, possibly batch sparge. And so that's our official topic. And I want to talk about batch sparging, not just within itself, but in relation to other sorts of sparging. Because I think that'll help people have a better understanding of the sparging process. And rumor is, and the reason we got you here, is that you are a huge proponent of batch sparging and its simplicity. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's really true. And that's, you know, I did fly sparge my first few batches, and then I got turned on to batch sparging, and that was it. The traditional way of brewing historically, many, many years in the past, was no sparging whatsoever, you know. It was just too difficult, and it didn't happen. Then party guy brewing came around where you would do a couple runoffs from your mash and make a couple different beers out of them.
Did you ever do that yourself, the party guy?
You know, I do party guy, about once a year. I get together with a couple friends. We make a 10-gallon batch of barley wine that takes about 75 pounds of grain.
Yeah.
And it takes so much water to mash that with the boil capacity we have, we don't even bother to sparge, so then we get to run off about 12 gallons of a 62 gravity beer for a party guile beer on that.
Right.
The industrial age and commercialization of brewing came around. Somebody hit on the idea of fly sparging to apparently maximize the efficiency and the extraction from the grains. And that's great, although, you know, as a home brewer, and with no intention of ever going commercial, I don't feel necessarily constrained to do what brewers do.
Right.
So I got into all grain brewing by reading a paper by Ken Schwartz about converting extract recipes to all grain, and he had a little design in there for a mash tun using one of Jack Schmidling's Easy Masher screens, which is, if you've never seen one, it's kind of like a miniature bazooka screen. And so I built a little 3-gallon cooler mash tun using that, and did a couple partial mash batches, fly sparging. And I found that with minimal equipment, it was a total pain to fly sparge. You know, I'd have to keep pouring water in and stuff. And I didn't have the, at that point I was brewing in my kitchen. I didn't have a place to set up a bigger system. I've got a small kitchen. And again, I'm lazy. I didn't have the desire to do any more effort.
Okay.
Then I ran across another paper that Ken had written about batch sparging. And I went, wow, now this sounds interesting. He makes some great points. Cooler, I've already, according to his directions. I tried it. I made an incredible alt beer, the first all-grain beer I made batch sparging, and I was hooked.
Okay. So that's what the batch sparging just went so well that you couldn't turn back to what a pain in the ass fly sparging was.
Exactly. I mean, and again, for me, not being a guy who wanted to deal with setting up a bunch of equipment and stuff, the simplicity of batch sparging appealed to me. And even at that point, I had a good idea of what a good beer was to be able to tell that I had made a good beer by batch sparging.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right, fair enough. All right, let's talk about then, sort of in comparison then. Now, you mentioned party guile, which party guile is a form of batch sparging, but instead of using all the runnings in one beer, you would actually make a separate beer with the later runnings. Is that right?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Which, to me, actually sounds like a pretty cool deal, but as a home brewer, kind of, you know, you have to have the extra resources.
That's pretty much it, man. You either have to devote extra time so you can boil two batches one after the other, or have the equipment so you can boil two batches pretty much simultaneously.
Right.
And to tell you the truth, it's one of those things that I, during that once a year brew, when I'm brewing with other people and we have access to all of our equipment together.
Okay. All right. So not often on the party guile. Although you mentioned when you do party guile, it's with something like a barley wine, which is perfect for party guile because you get those strong first runnings, but you're still making a decent pale ale with the next runnings too.
Oh, definitely so, man. We get 10 gallons of about 100 or so gravity barley wine.
Okay.
And we usually end up with about 12 gallons of a 60 to 62 gravity something. And oftentimes we will look through the grain bins and see what's in there and toss, you know, maybe some like Carafa or some more Crystal or something like that with the mash before we do the second runoff and, you know, make a brown ale or something different.
Right. Okay. Great idea. Now, continuous sparging, or fly sparging, as it's also known, which is what I do. And Denny, I do it because I think it's fun as well. I like that part of the process.
Sure.
You know, it
I'm not going to tell you you're crazy.
Yeah, well, you could, though. but I do like to do it because it's fun. But it also, I agree with you, it is kind of a pain in the ass. And the thing that becomes difficult about it for people, and we don't need to go into the whole description, but the thing that becomes difficult about it is, like you said, the extra amount of water, heating up the water, the exact amount of water that you're supposed to have, and basically just a whole process that goes along with fly sparging. So you got those two, and now we've got batch sparging. Okay,
right.
So give us the rundown on what then is batch sparging.
Yeah, batch sparging is a pretty simple and straightforward form of sparging, and sparging is more than just rinsing whatever sugars are left after the mash out of the grain, and there's a bunch of ways to go about it. In batch sparging, you do your mash as you normally would, using your normal ratio of grist to water, which is usually about a quart and a third to a pound of grain for me. And then when the mash is done, you do your voil off, and then you just completely drain your mash tun. And the speed at which you do that doesn't matter. You can go as fast as your system will allow you to go. Then you add all your sparge water at one time. You stir it in, and you voil off and run all that off once again. So then basically you're doing the same process twice. The deal in batch sparging and why it works is that in continuous sparging, you're kind of like generally rinsing the sugars out of the grains as the water filters down over them.
Okay.
It's batch sparging. You're getting all the sugars into solution in the water at one time by stirring it up and then just running all that out of there.
Okay.
And one of the interesting things about batch sparging is that as your runnings go throughout the course of them, the gravity won't change, which is truly amazing. If you've ever monitored your gravity when you continue a sparge, you notice that the runoff gravity continually drops. In batch sparging, that doesn't happen.
Right. Okay. Okay, that makes sense. That's a fair description. Denny, I want to get more into it, and I want to ask you some questions about that description, but I'll tell you what, we got to take another break and try to fix this audio again, too. Sorry to do that to you.
No, man. I'll just pop open the Bitburger pills here.
Yeah, you need a beer, my friend.
I'm just about done with this full sales session, so it's time for the Bitburger.
Yeah, I think I need a beer, and I think whoever is running our streaming server needs a beer at this moment as well, Denny.
If you can find him, I'll buy him one.
All right, I'll buy him too, Denny.
Okay.
Hang on for just a second, okay, because I really want to get to the basics of batch sparging before we get into the details of it. So hang in there for just 1 second.
Okay, great.
All right, Denny Kahn's on the line. Folks, I apologize. You know what happens? Well, we love to have guests from out of the territory, but you never know what's going to happen. It's not a multi-million-dollar studio, and even those studios have trouble. Over at FM, I get into trouble all the time when
Absolutely.
People are calling in and doing these things. So sometimes it works like a dream, and other times, well, it sounds like this. So let me go to work on it for just a second. I think I'm going to put Denny back on Skype, because even though it cuts out a little bit, it's a lot better than what he was sounding like on the phone there. So, hey, hang in there with us. If you are listening to the stream and having trouble, you're getting dropped off, I recommend people listening on the low stream. Click on to low bandwidth. It's at 24K instead of 56. It'll still sound just fine, but it decreases the load on the server, which I will say is supposed to be unlimited. I don't have limits on what's supposed to be able to tune in. I think someone's just asleep at the wheel over there, so I do apologize. Please tune into the low band if you can. Let's see if that doesn't clean things up. If it doesn't, go ahead back to the way you normally listen, and we're all just going to have to do the best we can. We'll try to make a good archive out of it if it doesn't work live. That's why I want Denny that's why I'm going to get him on Skype, because he's just going to sound clearer for the archive. And the worst thing to do would be to make it accessible for everybody listening live, and then the archive is just terrible. I'd rather make it as good as we can live and as good as we can for the archive and kind of balance both of those.
Very
things,
good.
Right? So I do apologize. Give us just a second. Let me see if I can clean things up. When we come back, we'll do more bat sparging with Denny Kahn.
You're listening to the Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
What? What's your voicemail?
What?
Justin's a pansy.
I don't know all about this.
He's ugly. He's got curly hair. He's too fucking tall and lanky. He talks too fucking much. And he has to import women to get laid from Europe. Now, what a fucking pussy is this?
Come on.
You know? And he has to do a radio show to feel important. You know? I mean, you might as well just record yourself in, like, Pro Tools or something and call it even. But no, you gotta share your own ignorance with everybody else, because you're a fucking tool, man. You're a tool of the ass. You know? You might as well give yourself a hand job while you're mixing, because it's not working. You know? You want to create a buzz? Quit now, because you're a pansy and a half. So I'm gonna hang up right now. Get a job. Quit your 18-hour-a-week job. And work the streets, because you're a no-talent hack, and you deserve a rotten hell.
Justin, I found your uncle up here in Oregon, and he had to say that. So. There you go.
I was hoping you might let me have some.
Touch the bell.
I was hoping you might let me have some.
Touch the bell.
Bring it in there.
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 Touch the bell.
let me have some.
Touch the felt.
Bring it in there.
Touch the felt.
Let me have some.
Touch the felt. Touch the felt.
I was hoping you might let me have some.
Touch the felt.
I was hoping you might let me have some.
Touch the felt.
Bring it in there.
Touch the felt.
Bring it in there.
Touch the felt.
Bring it in there.
Touch the felt.
Let me have some.
Bring it in there.
Touch the felt.
Let me have some.
Bring it in there.
Touch the felt.
Let me have some.
Touch the felt.
You're listening to Three Guys.
Excuse me, what about me?
Sorry. You're listening to Three Guys and One Girl. Use a radio show as an excuse to drink more beer. The Brewcasters.
On the Brewing Network.
All right, and the third time's a charm, isn't it, folks? So let's give it one more go with Denny Kahn here. I got him back on the other connection to try to clear things up. And like I said, I do apologize if you're getting dropped out of the stream. We want to make sure that the archive works well because that will be our last resort. If you can't listen live, you can always just tune back in tomorrow when we put the archive up, and that would be the best way to do it if it's not going to work today. Denny, you there with us?
I am here.
All right. Well, at least you sound clearer now than you did on the landline, and I think we're just going to have to go with that and hope for the best, my friend. Being an audio engineer, you know how things drop out, right?
I work over a lot. I know how it goes.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, let's try to get through it and get the best audio quality that we can. If it doesn't work, I'll send it over to you, Denny, and then you can run it through your studio there.
You can pay me in beer.
Help! I'd be happy to do that. Okay. Still getting dropped out here on the Skype a little bit, too. Why don't we do this about your batch sparging? We just discussed sort of the basics of it. What do you do? Give us a basic, I guess, your rye IPA. That's your most popular one. You're doing it all the time. Give us a rundown of what you do to batch sparge that beer.
My setup out here in my garage, I think you put a link to my website up on your chat room so people can take a look at my my setup there. My brewing stand is a picnic table, and I've got my blue and white cooler on it. I use a total of 16 1/4 pounds of grain. I mash with 5 1/4 quarts of water to hit 1.3.
All right. Hey, Denny, hang on. Denny, hang on a sec. It's cutting out there too. No one can hear what you're saying. All right, I don't know what to do here, guys. I'm between a rock and a hard place because Denny's describing his brew house here, and I can't even hear it. So I know that you can't too. We're getting lots of cutting out. I'm not sure what to do on this end, Denny.
Shall we try this, Justin?
I'm afraid that that's going to have to be the case. Yeah, I don't know what to do because it's definitely cutting out and people can't hear what you're saying here. If I put you on the phone, you can hardly see what you're saying there. Hear what you're saying there too. And I'm really not sure why that's happening. Everything seems to be functioning properly as far as I can see. Do you have, I know you're on a cordless, do you have a landline you could pick up that's not a cordless, Denny?
There may be a lot of barking dogs in the background, but
barking dogs are okay. We usually have one in our studio, as a matter of fact. I can make that dog bark if it makes you feel more comfortable.
You know, maybe I was just like too far away from my base station.
Okay.
You don't seem to be cutting out so bad at this point.
Yeah, you're clearing up now. I can hear you now. So I wonder if it's just that
really?
Portable phone there. Yeah. Yeah.
Could be. If it's working, let's continue and see what happens, shall we?
Yeah, tie that base station to your leg, Denny. Just strap it right on so that wherever you go, the base station's with you.
Yeah, you got it, man.
All right, start over. And to do it, let me do this. You can check out Denny's brew system at hbd.org/cascade/Denny Brew. So check that out, and you can look at exactly what he's talking about when he's about to describe his batch sparge process. So go ahead, Denny, start over. What do you do when you go to batch sparge, and you can use your system as you were doing as an example?
Okay, so like today I was making the rye IPA. I mashed in with 5 1/4 gallons of water for 16 1/4 pounds of grain. That's a ratio of about 1.3 to 1.
Okay.
Hit my 153 mash temp after some stir. I put the grain in a paper bag. This is, again, you know, part of the cheap and easy system. I put the grain in a paper bag under my arm so I can pour it in while I stir. And
that's so
it's
awesome.
A great way to...
I do the same thing, but I thought it was because I was an idiot.
No, man, it's because we're both idiots.
Yeah, but I do the same thing because I don't know how else to get it poured in and stir at the same time.
Just the other day in some discussion forum, a guy was going, you know, I always get dough balls because when I pour the grain in from the bucket, it just all goes in at once and I can't stir. And I'm going... Does this mean say to you, there's something wrong with your method?
Right.
You know? It's the path of least resistance, man. It's cheap, it's easy, and it's effective. So
you're
pouring in, stirring, breaking up dough balls, get it all stirred up for about 5 minutes, the temperature equalizes, let it rest for about 60 minutes or so while I come in, do a few miles on the treadmill and take a shower.
Okay.
I know, man. That's like the good and evil side. You know?
Yeah. I'm brewing beer, but I'm going to take off a few calories.
That's right, man. You know, I watch the calorie readout to see how many brews I've earned on the treadmill.
That's perfect. Well, you have to brew. You have to burn off at least maybe half of the batch that you're brewing. So,
I'd be on there all day. Anyway, I go back out. I recirculate. I just have a cheap inline plastic nylon valve. If you guys look at the website, you can see that. I've experimented with putting, like, you know, a nice stainless steel bulkhead and stuff on there. It actually made things worse. I started getting air into my runoffs and stuff like that. And it was pointless, you know. So I went back to the cheap stuff that was effective. I just crack the valve a bit, and I run about 1 to 2 quarts into a 2-quart pitcher, and by the time it's always cleared up, so then I take the hose, I flop it over into my kettle, pour the part in the pitcher back over the top.
Sure.
Then I go ahead and open up my valve full, because at that point my grain bed has pretty much set up into a nice filter bed, and I can go as fast as my runoff as my valve will allow.
Okay.
And drain that into the kettle. While I'm doing that, I'm heating up my batch sparge water to about 185 or 190 degrees.
Oh, wow, you're getting it up there.
Well, I am, man. And the people are so paranoid about this 170-degree thing, and if you think about it, that's not the temperature your water needs to be. That's the temperature you want to keep your grain bed below.
Okay.
Right? Hotter water is not going to hurt you. I've proven it to myself in hundreds of batches, you know.
Okay.
So basically when I heat my sparge water up to 185, 190, I pour it in and my grain bed ends up being about 165 to 168.
No kidding.
Perfect.
Now, okay. Let me slow down a bit at that. So you get your water up to 185 And that's right. And you've already drained the wort at that point out of your grain, the first batch. All right.
Mash 10 is dry, and I've closed the valve again.
Okay.
Closing the valve again is very important.
Yeah. Listen, Denny, you must listen to the show because you know who you're talking to here. So
yeah, I have friends who brew like that, you know.
Yes. Okay.
And if they're listening, they know who they are.
All right, so you close the valve,
and then you dump it right in? You dump it right in, and there are a lot of formulas out there that will let you figure out how much sparge water to use and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got them on my own website. They were in the magazine article I wrote. But it's even easier than that, man. Basically, with your sparge water, your grain has already absorbed as much water as it's going to, so whatever you put in is the amount you're going to put out. So you measure the amount of wort you have in your kettle and subtract that from the amount you want to boil. Say you have 3.5 gallons in your kettle and you need a 7-gallon boil volume.
Yeah.
You heat up 3.5 gallons of water for your batch sparge, and that's it.
Okay.
You pour it all in, you stir it thoroughly, because again, the idea is you want to get those grains into solution, dissolved in all that water you just poured in.
Okay.
So you stir it up thoroughly for a few minutes, you do the same recirculation process, and then drain into your kettle, and you're done.
Okay, now let's back up that. Now you're recirculating because now you've stirred up all, now this is the part I really wanted to get at. When you dump the water and you're stirring it all up, but what you're doing then is creating a cloudy wort, and you got a bunch of chunks floating around, so you need to make sure you do a good Vorloff or a recirculation until it runs clear again? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, exactly. And okay. Clear is a relative term. When I look for clear, what I don't want to see is chunks and particles coming out of it.
And you know what? John Palmer says the same thing. By clear, it doesn't mean that it needs you need to look through it like water, because it can be cloudy, right? But no chunks.
Exactly. No chunks. Okay. Cloudiness just... I mean, you know, and there are people who get real hung up on the clarity of their runoff, and sometimes I get crystal clear runoff, sometimes I don't, but I've never found a real correlation between the clarity of the runoff and the clarity of the finished beer.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, good to know.
That's pretty much it. And how much you have to recirculate depends on the kind of loudering system you're using. And, you know, there are people I know who have tried batch sparging, and they say, boy, you know, it takes me so long to do the Vorloff, and I'm doing like 3 or 4 gallons that it's just not worth it to me. And, you know, that's a fair comment.
Yeah,
on the other hand, you know, I never take more than 2 quarts, and usually about 1, and my Vorloff never takes me more than 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay.
So, you know, I would say that the success you're going to have with this method depends a lot on the equipment that you use.
Right. Yeah, I guess that makes sense, doesn't it?
There's a wide variety. Almost any equipment that works for fly sparging will work for batch sparging too, but it's a personal decision, you know.
Yeah, I get you're right. I got to tell you, I find it hard to believe that on your second batch, then you've dumped your 185 degree water in there, that it only takes you a couple, and you've stirred it all up. It only takes you a couple of quarts to get that sucker running clear again when you're recirculating.
To me, is one of the beauties of this stainless steel hose braid that I use in my cooler.
Okay.
I have good friends who batch sparge using manifolds and stuff like that, and it works great, but it always takes them longer for their wort to clear than it does for me with my stainless steel braid.
Okay.
And again, I'm not putting down anybody's manifold system out there, you know?
Sure.
It's like, everybody should use what they want to use, but I'm just telling you what I have observed personally.
Okay. Well, fair enough. So, now, you've got a false bottom on the bottom of your mash tun, as well
no.
as this stain? No, it's just
no.
this stainless hose you're talking
just,
about.
Yeah, yep. It, basically, what it is I unscrewed the spigot from a 48-quart Rubbermaid cooler.
Okay.
I took a rubber mini keg bung, you know, like the little things that go in like the little, what are they, 3.8 liter kegs or something like that,
yeah.
Little rubber bungs.
Okay.
I stuck that into the hole where the spigot used to be.
All right.
I ran a piece of 3/8 inch OD vinyl tubing through that.
All right.
On the inside of the cooler, I stuck a piece of stainless steel hose braid from a toilet supply line. Yes, it's true. Brand new.
Brand new, thank you.
Not previously used. Slipped that over the end of the vinyl tubing and secured it with a hose clamp on the inside. Took the other end of that stainless steel braid, folded over a few times, and pounded the crap out of it with a hammer to seal it.
Yeah.
On the outside of the cooler, I stuck a little nylon inline valve into that tubing sticking through the cooler wall.
And yeah.
Put another longer piece of vinyl tubing on the output side of that valve, and that's the system you see on my website that I've been using for 8 years and 250 batches.
No need for that any of the fancy systems there. You got to put it together and make it go.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much it, man, you know. And, again, I'm lazy and I'm pragmatic, and this works, and it's easy to use. And so until I find a reason to change it, it's staying like it is.
Right.
I have experimented with other things because, like everybody else, I read about other people doing things, and I go, boy, I wonder if that'll work for me and stuff.
Right.
And I have yet to find anything that, for me, is as easy to use, as efficient, and as inexpensive to put together.
Okay.
Because, like I said, I'm not an equipment guy. I don't want to spend my time building equipment. I want to spend my time drinking beer and enjoying it.
Man, Denny.
Me too.
Denny, we got a spare room down here. If you want, you want to move in, just hang out. I mean,
you got to see my place. You guys got to come up here.
Yeah, I think you're right. With your permission, I'm now going to actually use the word pragmatic to describe myself rather than lazy. Is that okay with you, Denny?
I really like that idea, Justin. I think that we should give up the word lazy completely and switch to pragmatic.
Yeah, absolutely. Because pragmatic has such a positive connotation to it.
It does.
I'm not a lazy brewer. I'm a pragmatic brewer.
Yeah. You can be sure that when I label this show on the website, it's called the Pragmatic Show, not the Lazy Brewer Show. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Let's talk about water to grain ratio. Now, there's a water to grain ratio for your initial mash, which I want to ask you about. And then I'm wondering if there's a separate water to grain ratio for when you do your batch sparge. So talk to me about that. What do you use? I know what John Palmer says in his book. What do you use as for your initial mash? What's your water to grain ratio?
It generally runs about 1.3 quarts per pound, and that is because with the gravity beers that I usually make, which is people know from my signature, or in the 60s or so.
Okay.
60s plus. If I use about a quart and a third per pound of grain, then that gives me darn close to half of my total boil volume from my initial mash runoff.
And is that something you want to target, is half of your total boil volume? Is that a general rule?
Yeah, theoretically, you get the absolute best efficiency if your initial runoff and your sparge runoff are the same volumes.
Okay.
So sometimes if I know that my first runoff is going to be a lot less than half of my total boil volume, I'll add more water to the mash after conversion is complete before I do that first runoff to try and equalize them. But in truth, while that is a great way to optimize every last thing, it doesn't make enough difference to really go to great pains over it.
Okay.
Know? If I'm within a gallon of my two runoffs being equal, I don't mess with it, man.
Gotcha.
That's the pragmatic side again.
Sure. Except that, you know, what surprises me about that is that you're telling me that you hit your numbers exactly, but you're also being kind of like me about it, and you're going, well, hey, it doesn't matter. I'm getting sort of where I'm supposed to be.
The, That's because it's the total amount of water that you run through that grain that's going to make the difference in your efficiency. I mean, you know, obviously crush is the number one factor in your efficiency.
Okay.
But then the amount of water you run through the grain makes a difference. So say if I'm like, you know, 3 quarts short of half my total or half of my total boil volume on my mash runoff, I'll just add an extra 3 quarts to my sparge when I do that so that I get the same amount of water through the grain and get those sugars out.
Now, even I can understand that. That's simple. Seriously.
You know,
so what you're saying is, if for example, then, I just want to make sure I am understanding it. If you were looking for 3.5 gallons out of your mash runoff, your initial mash runoff, but you only got 3 gallons, you would add, instead of doing, the 3.5 gallons for your batch sparge, you would then do 4. You'd add a half a gallon to your batch.
Sure. Yeah. It's close enough. It's not going to... I mean, we're home brewers, man.
And
while we want to make the best beer possible, we don't have to worry about eking out every last cent of extract. We don't have to worry about, you know... I mean, there's just a lot of things that we don't have to deal with. And that, again, going back to cooking, that's one of the things that taught me. It's like, you just compensate.
Yeah.
It's going to turn out okay. Dan Listerman, many years ago on the Rec Crafts Brewing News Group, made a great statement that I love, which is malted barley wants to become beer.
Yes.
You know? because that just speaks to, like, how easy it is to brew if you relax and just let yourself do it.
Right, right. Okay.
And that's always the advice I give people when they're doing their first brew. Don't freak out if things don't go the way you expect.
Right.
Go with it, you know, and deal with it.
Yeah. No, that's good. In fact, you know what, Denny? Show's over. I'm going to brew. I mean, that was the most simple advice I could have, and thanks for your time. I got to do a batch sparge right now. Okay.
Well, you ought to give it a try, you know.
All right. So just to clarify then, Your ratio that you're going for in your initial mash is the same that you're going to go for in your batch sparge, because you're looking for, roughly, if you can do it, 50% of your wort to come out of your mash runoff and then 50% to come out of your batch sparge runoff. Is that right?
Well, don't forget that the grain is going to absorb water during your mash that it won't absorb during your sparge.
Okay.
So, I mean... It's like, you know, when I mash at 1 1/3 quarts per pound, I'm using 5 1/4 gallons of water.
Okay.
Right? But with that 5 1/4 gallons of water, I get about, you know, 3.5, 3.75 out.
Okay.
And so then to get my 7 gallon boil volume, I just make up the difference with my sparge water.
Okay.
So it's not, you don't use the same amounts of water.
Right.
Each time.
Okay. So you're good. So you wait then, okay, you do your runoff, your mash runoff, and you wait to see what you've got to figure out how much water you got to heat up to do your batch sparge?
If I'm doing a whole lot of other things during the day, yes. Generally, no. What I do is I estimate using ProMash's water needed calculator how much I'm going to need for my sparge, and I get that amount going, and then... By the time I've got my mash runoff done, that water's heated up, and if I need to add or subtract a little bit, it won't be more than a quart or two, and it'll be really easy to do it.
Okay, I gotcha. All right. Well, that sounds it sounds like a fairly simple process. Now, one thing that you and I talked about that I want to make sure we talk about here, because we're talking about how you use a water to grain ratio, and we've talked about, say, that your batch water you heat up to 185 because you know that gets you to your temperature. One of the things you and I talked about earlier today during our pre-interview is obviously that people need to know their system. And that the efficiency of your system is different than the efficiency of my system. So when we talk about a water-to-grain ratio, and we talk about, say, then the temperature of your sparge water, your batch sparge water, these things are going to vary based on a person's system?
Yeah, to a certain degree. Mash ratio, I don't think, is really going to vary a lot from system to system. It will vary a little bit, because everybody's crush is going to be different, and the crush is what is going to determine how much water gets absorbed by the grain.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and then that will have at least a minor impact on how much you get out of your mash, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to be a variable. But in terms of how high to heat the sparge water, you betcha, man. That is dependent on your system and what happens. And the best thing to do is to sneak up on it. You know, I guarantee you that I started out with my system not heating my sparge water above 170. I'd put that in and see where that left my grain bed.
Right.
And generally, it was only a degree or two higher, if any. And so then I started going, okay, so if that made it this much hotter, then if I go 5 degrees hotter on my sparge water, it should make my grain bed this much hotter.
Okay.
Hey, look at that. It worked. Okay, let's try a little bit more the next time.
Yeah.
And so that's how I arrived at that figure for my system. Now, I've gathered from other people that that works pretty well for them, but again, it's something that everybody needs to determine for themselves.
Sure. Yeah, I that makes sense. And I had to say, that was one of the big topics with my show I did a few weeks ago about me missing my, actually it was my strike temperature. And trying to figure out, you know, what temperature you have to strike at depends on how much, heat energy you're losing as you're striking. So I think you give great advice you know, being honest about myself, I was being a little impatient about my system and about, like you just said, that, you know, you'd try it one batch and then you'd up it a little the next batch and then you'd change it again the next batch and figure out exactly what your temperatures did. And I wasn't doing that. I was going right for it and expecting to get to nail my temperature. And surprise, surprise, I didn't, you know.
Yeah, no, man, I think that it's important that, like, when you're getting stuff together, especially on a new system, you kind of, like, take your time and think your way through it. And I have learned the lesson of not making more than one change at a time, because if
right.
you do that, you have no idea what had the effect, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now let's go back real quick, because you mentioned it briefly. On your initial mash, how long do you let that mash rest? What's your standard?
Almost always 60 minutes, sometimes 75 if, like today, I'm spending a little extra time on the treadmill.
Oh, yeah,
The only time I go longer than that is when I'm brewing a triple, and I go for 90 minutes on the triple, just for that little extra touch of fermentability, because, you know, the longer mash time is a minor variable in wort fermentability.
Okay.
And the longer you let your mash go, the longer those enzymes are going to keep breaking down the sugars. So
yeah.
When I do a triple, I want to make sure it's highly fermentable or digestible.
Okay.
And so I go for 90 on the triple.
And do you
generally 60?
Okay, generally 60 minutes, 90 on your triple for
yeah.
more ferment. Anything you want more fermentables, you go a little longer.
Exactly, sure,
yeah,
exactly.
Okay. And do you have a magic number that you like to mash at, or does that change, you know, depending on your beer?
It depends on the beer, man. For stuff like pilsners and triples and stuff like that,
yeah.
probably like in the 145 to 148 area.
Okay.
For basic pale ales, stuff like that, maybe in the low 50s, you know, an IPA is 152, 153, something like that.
All right.
For the, you know, real malty stuff, if I'm, you know, a Bock, Doppelbock, I'll generally run up to about 158 or something. And I do single infusion mashes 90% of the time.
Okay.
I do step mashes once in a while, because I haven't really decided if I can tell a difference in the beers I do through step mashing, so
good question.
I whip one out every once in a while just to see if I can tell a difference.
Yeah. You know, that's a great I'm reading through Charlie Papazian's new book, the Microbrewed
uh-huh.
Adventures book. It's a great book, by the way. And in the back of it, he just gives tons of recipes. For every story that he gives about his adventures as a home brewer and with the microbrew people, for every story, he gives a recipe. And I'm thumbing through the recipes in the back, and I'm going, oh, well, this will be a great one to try. And every one I go through is a step mash. Every single one. And for those of you, if you're not familiar, just in case, step mash is, you gotta do it at a couple of temperatures as you go. Yeah. So you start out as a lower temperature, and then you'll head up to your fermentable temperature, and then you'll head up even higher than that, usually. But there's several different ways to step mash. And I'm looking through these recipes, and virtually 90%, it seems like so far, are these step mash procedures. And it bums me out because, I can't even, get my single step mash right, Denny. So, I'm looking at all these recipes I want to try going, shit. I know that you said you're doing experiments to find out if you can tell the difference. What's the theory behind doing a step mash?
The theory behind doing a step mash is that different enzymes are active in different temperature ranges, and the various enzymes will have different effects on your mash. I mean, for instance, in the 140s, your beta enzymes are more active, and in the upper 50s, your alpha enzymes are more active. The lower temperature rests give you more fermentability. The higher temperature rests give you more body in your beer, basically.
Okay.
So the theory is that by doing these different rests at different temperatures for different amounts of time, you can manipulate the fermentability and the body of your beer. And I find that a fascinating theory, but I can't swear that I can tell a difference. And if I can tell a difference, it is so slight that I would not let a step mash scare you off of doing a recipe, Justin. I would say pick a compromised temperature and do a single infusion. And that's generally what I advise all new brewers who are getting freaked out about doing a step mash saying, oh my goodness, this recipe has a protein rest. I've never done one of those before.
Right.
You can almost always get away without doing that kind of stuff without severely negative consequences.
And the chances are that my palate and the other beginner's palate, we're not going to know the difference, are we?
Well, that's definitely true. And I think that, I won't say that step mashes don't make a difference in the finished beer,
okay,
but they may make so little difference that it's not worth not brewing a beer if you don't want to do a step mash.
Okay.
And, that's the way I go. I make Pilsners all winter long when it's cold, and I go back and forth between doing step mashes, decoctions, and single infusions.
Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, I think that they all turn out great. So
right.
Being pragmatic again.
Yeah, yeah. Now that makes sense too. Well, I like that advice because there are so many recipes in there that I want to try, and I'm going, shit, step mash again. So maybe just go for it anyway.
Do the recipe first, do it as a single infusion, and then someday when you have your shit together and you've got the whole thing down, then go back and try it as a step mash and see if you think it was worth the extra effort.
Right. And for me, having my shit together means that Jamil's here to help me brew.
You're a lucky guy.
I am.
I'm wearing the Mr. Malty hat he gave me in his honor today.
Nice. Yeah, I got made fun of for that after the last show because, I was complaining about how I screwed everything up, and I got emails going, oh, wah, all you have to do is call Dr. Scott or Jamil or any of these guys and they to help you brew, and here you are crying about your screw-ups, And,
really, man? Oh, geez. Well, I guess I should feel lucky I live up here, huh?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Jamil's got to help you, not me.
You should feel lucky. A quick side note question came through from the chat room. They want to know if you've won any awards in your competitions. You got some award-winning beers?
Like I said, I entered the Oregon Homebrew Festival up in Corvallis every year, and I brought home lots of seconds and thirds for... oh, geez, alt beers, Pilsners, bourbon, vanilla porter, rye IPA, all that kind of stuff. Biggest award I've won is one year, my friend Kevin and I, who refer to ourselves as the Stoner Brothers, entered our old Stoner barley wine in the state fair.
Okay.
I mean, we're 50-year-old hippies. What are you going to say?
Sure.
So every year we make this batch of Old Stoner barley when I was telling you about that we party guiled, and we entered some of that in the Oregon State Fair and took a blue ribbon with that a few years ago.
Beautiful.
I'm down to my last bottle of that. It's 5 years old now, and it's heaven. I wish I could clone it.
Okay.
So, but I mean, that's about it. And I just, like I said, I just don't enter a lot of competitions because, well, I was going to say I'm lazy, but I'm really pragmatic.
You're pragmatic, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's a new brewer's term.
Yeah, it's right. I love it. I love it.
So, yeah, I've won those kinds of awards. I haven't ever entered NHC or anything like that.
Okay.
I figure if I don't enter, I can't lose.
Yeah, I like that theory, too, actually.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we around here don't think that it is a standard of being a good brewer that you're award winning, but we do talk a lot about competitions and things like that, so it did come through the chat room and I wanted to ask you about it.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, to me, the biggest award that I could have gotten is that there are so many people out there who started brewing all grain after, like, reading about the way I do it, and who have, like, brewed my rye IPA and bourbon vanilla porter and alt recipes and sent me emails going, oh, my God, even my wife likes this beer. You know, that is the absolute best award any home brewer can get when other home brewers think well of you.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, how about this? I got a message from one of our chat room users right now that says, I just opened a bottle of Denny's bourbon vanilla porter. And he says that it's ambrosia. It's wonderful stuff. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm so honored, man. I just love hearing that. You
know? Which
it's great because I get to trade beers with a lot of different people around because of that. I mean, people send me their versions of my beers, and I send them my versions back.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I'm fairly flaky about that. It's a real nice experience interacting with other homebrewers like that.
You know, isn't that the cool thing about all of the forums that are out there now and the homebrew forums?
Oh, yeah.
Is that guys get on there and you get to know each other, in a text sort of way, but you get to know each other and you start sharing beer. Not only are you sharing tips, but all of a sudden you got a beer exchange program. It blows me away every time I see that stuff. It's cool.
It's really cool. I mean, homebrewers are a great group of people, and kind of in line with that, I want to give a plug for next weekend. We're having the Hop Madness Festival up here, which I don't know if you've heard about. Started as the 20th anniversary celebration for Fresh Hops about 6 years ago, and since then, a bunch of homebrew clubs in the Valley, Willamette Valley here, have taken it over, and it's an overnight camp out beer drinking extravaganza. Dave Wills brings in piles of fresh hops cut right out of the fields for people to brew with.
Beautiful.
People set up their brewing systems, pick the hops off the binds, brew with them. I run the Best Damn Hoppy Beer Contest, which is no styles are allowed, and the Best Damn Hoppy Beer is picked by a panel of drunken judges.
I love that. Shit, I might win that competition. I ought to enter.
No.
This is all happening next weekend in Brooks, Oregon on Saturday and Sunday. If anybody's interested, you can go to the website hopmadness.com and get more info about it.
I'm glad you brought that up. You could also probably go to freshhops.com. Dave Wills, if you folks don't know, was one of the great and generous sponsors that helped get the Brewing Network to the NHC, where I actually met Denny. So I guess you could do this whole long string of relations and say that Dave Wills from Fresh Hops was responsible for Denny doing the show today, because I met him there, and it was thanks to those sponsors. Go to freshhops.com and pay Dave Wills a visit. He's a really nice guy, and he had no idea who I was. He's a good guy, isn't he?
Dave is a great guy, and he has been instrumental in putting this festival on for the last 6 years. He contributes a keg of beer. He contributes hops for prizes for the Best Damn Hoppy Beer Contest.
That's so cool.
As did Rye Yeast this year, too.
We got some great
prizes for the contest.
Yeah, he had no idea who I was when I called him up, and I said, hey, we're this radio show, and we're going to NHC, and we're looking for sponsors. And he was very cool, and he jumped right on board. So freshhops.com, check that out. You know, I heard a rumor about that festival, Denny, I think from somebody who called into one of our shows, that it was a couple of years back, somebody actually kind of stole the farmer's truck, the hop truck.
Oh, you got to talk about that, Justin.
But it's am I talking about the right festival, or am I mixing up my festival?
Oh, yes, I'm afraid you are. That was,
yeah. You know,
that
what's
that is not fun, waking up in the morning with a serious hangover and seeing state police all over the campground.
But what's great is that even after that happened, you guys were invited back, and you've been on your best behavior ever since.
Well, actually, we had to find a new location after that.
Oh, I did. Oh, I thought it was that you guys went right back there.
No.
I didn't know that.
We changed locations after that because they weren't real just having us come back.
That makes it even funnier then, Danny.
It does.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, well, right. You know,
it happens.
I guess, yeah, exactly.
You know, crazy IPAs.
Pardon?
Crazy IPAs will make you do that.
Yeah, yes, they will. And, man, that was amazing. But we don't do that anymore. just have the festival now.
No, it's a safe and sane. Safe and sane.
Yeah, well, I don't know about sane, but it's definitely safe.
Okay.
We're still doing the tours of the hop farms and stuff like that. Anyway, it's a great thing. If people are interested in coming, go to hopmadness.com, check it out, okay. And definitely give Dave a visit, too.
Very cool. Did you type that in the chat room for us, please, Daniela? Hopmadness.com if you want to go to the festival, or, of course, freshhops.com, and Dave Wills is a good contributor to that. Okay, I want to use this opportunity to segue over to efficiency with you, Denny.
Sure.
And here's what I want to ask you about. Now, as you said in the beginning, I'm a big fan of John Palmer, and I'm a big fan of his book, as I think everybody is. I mean, it's basically one of the standards in home brewing. And
the new edition just rocks, man. Every time I read it, I get excited.
Isn't it great? I mean, this new edition is so great. It's a kind of book, and my listeners know this. It goes along with being pragmatic. If you get too technical on me, I'm going right to sleep. I'm turning off. I'm out the door. The great thing about this book is that you could have it either way, because John really, he'll go for 5 pages and he'll give you the whole technical rundown. And then on the very next page, he'll say, okay, if you didn't bother to read everything I just said, check this out, because I'm going to make it easy for you. And it really does that. Isn't that great? Like, every part of the process, he does that for you.
Yeah, his writing style is so good in that book that it's just, you know, it just blows me away. It's fun to read, and you're getting information painlessly.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. You can read it, like, I'm a big novel reader. I mean, I really need to be entertained. I got a short attention span. And this is one of those books that I can sit on the back porch and read this whether I'm brewing or not. So, all that ass kissing and plugging aside, because I really do like the book. The reason I'm bringing it up is because he talks about different sorts of sparging and then their effect on efficiency. And what John Palmer says is that batch sparging is actually less, and he puts it right in the middle. He's got three different types of sparge. He's got your standard fly sparging, basically, which he says has the best efficiency. And then he puts batch sparging in the middle, which has, so for example, if standard sparging is 80% efficiency, he says that batch sparging only has 75% efficiency. And then you can go down to no sparge, which I got some questions for you later, goes down to 65% efficiency. So what do you think about losing efficiency by doing batch sparging?
Well, in the first place, it's kind of relative. In the second place, you know, going from 80 to 75% efficiency is, to me, not a big deal.
It's nothing,
but,
right?
Seriously, yeah. I mean, it really is nothing. I mean, you know, it means it's going to take you another 25 or 50 cents worth of grain to reach the same efficiency.
Yeah.
But that aside, I don't necessarily agree. I suppose that given a perfect fly sparging system,
okay,
that batch sparging would probably have to be less efficient.
Okay.
That said, I don't know anybody who's got a perfect fly sparging system, and I have known of more people whose efficiency has gone up when they started batch sparging, it has gone down.
Okay.
Now, of course, that's not universally true, because there's somebody listening right now who goes, well, that's
bull, man.
Well, there always is, Danny.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, I know of more cases where the efficiency actually went up. So, again, you know, I mean, here's an example. Today, my rye IPA, I got 86% efficiency batch sparging.
Okay. Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's my average these days, 83 to 86%. And I contribute that to the way I crush my grain more than anything else.
Okay.
I think crush is the major variable in efficiency. But I also think that because in order for a fly sparging system to be really good, you have to follow something like John's flow diagrams, you know, where he's showing like water through a system.
Yeah.
And you have to build a really perfect fly system.
Right.
And few people have that.
Okay.
So, you know, I guess that in terms of that, I think that for most people, batch sparging is going to be at least as efficient as fly sparging is.
Okay. See, now that's good to know.
I'm sorry, John. You know I love you, buddy, but I just disagree.
Yeah. I'll tell him. I'm going to be talking to him in a couple of weeks, actually. So.
Oh, really? Oh, great. Yeah. I disagree with him on his first word hopping theory, too, saying you should only use low alpha noble hops, but that's for another show, I guess.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. Now I kind of want you and John in town at the same time. If I ever get John on the show, I'm calling you up. Yeah.
That'd be great, man.
Yeah.
Denny and John Smackdown.
Yeah. It'll be like the steel cage match of brewing, you know? Okay.
That's right. Mr. Science against Mr. Bozo.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, now I like what you say. So just as a quick sum, I like that you say, for one, the difference between 80% and 75% is, you know, you can shake a stick at it. It's not that big a deal.
Right, man. Oh, really?
Yeah. And on top of that, because it's so difficult to get a perfect fly sparge system, that's probably not even the case. You might even increase your efficiency, which
that's definitely true. Now, you know, and again, people need to realize I am not by any means putting down fly sparging. I'm merely presenting batch sparging as an alternative that has no downsides that I've found. There are people out there with like killer brewing stuff that are really set up for fly sparging, and that's what they should do.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's all about your equipment and the way you want to brew. And so it's like if you want to brew as easily as you can and make really great beer doing it, batch sparging is something you need to consider.
Is this almost like the old discussion, Denny, is it the size that matters or is it how you use it? I mean, it's kind of the same thing we're saying here.
Size.
Daniela says.
Very easy, size.
Daniela says size, Denny.
You know, I'm not going there, man.
Okay. Now, you mentioned briefly, so before we take a break, I think it's a good time to talk about this as our last question, then we'll take a break, and then I got a bunch more for you, too, Denny. But okay. You mentioned that efficiency has so much to do with how you crush your grain. And this has come up with me, and everybody has a local homebrew shop, and of course, a lot of people will order from the big guys, from Northern Brewer and Beer, and More Beer too. And I've seen both of their crushed grain. I've actually seen examples in my hands. You're saying, and it's because of how the husk is broken up, right? And what the amount of contact that the water has with the starches in there. You're telling us that how that grain is crushed is all important to efficiency.
The phrase is crush till you're scared.
Is that right?
Yeah. I have a whole lot of flour in my crush. And again, this is another one of the things that's going to depend on your own brewing system.
Okay.
I have discovered that I can take I've got a JSP adjustable malt mill.
Okay.
And I crank the rollers until they're closed as far as they go, open them until I can just barely see them move, and that's how I crush my grain.
Okay.
And there's a ton of flour in there. I have had two stuck runoffs in 258 batches, and I have never had tannin and astringency problems because I mean, and people worry, that's one thing people worry a lot about in terms of crushing too fine.
Okay.
And my experience has been if you keep your temperature and pH under control, those, there's like three factors that you have to worry about for tannins, and only one of them is the shredded husks.
Yeah.
And if you have the shredded husks but can keep your pH and temp under control, that's not going to be a problem for you. And by crushing it so that I get a lot of flour, then I have a lot of endosperm contact with the water, which allows every little bit of sugar to come out of there.
Okay.
But, you know, and again, this is something that everybody needs to experiment with. If you're buying your grains from someplace online and they're coming crushed already,
yeah,
and your efficiency is low, there may be really not a lot you can do about it. Maybe you can talk to them and ask them to double crush your grains.
Yeah.
Obviously, what they're trying to do is come up with a crush that's going to work for everybody, and
yeah,
I certainly can't fault them for that. You know, they've got to be conservative in that way. Whereas I can, like, and anybody else with a mill can fine-tune their crush. So I would just basically say, if you have your own mill and you feel like you might want to improve your efficiency, and again, efficiency is not it's not a race, you know?
Yeah.
It's more important to have a consistent efficiency than to have a high efficiency. I would rather know that I was going to have 65% every time than 65% one time and 95% the next time and 80% the time after that.
Right.
But if you have your own mill and you can experiment, then try crushing a little bit finer and see what happens. And if your efficiency goes up and you don't have any kind of stuck runoff, maybe try it a little finer next time. You know, until you're scared.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I've actually thought about double crushing my next batch because some people have said the same thing, that it might be a grain thing. You buy whole grains in general, Denny, and then crush them yourself?
Yeah, I do. Our club does group grain buys once a year, and we just ended up with, what was it, like 6 or 7 tons, something like that.
Wow. Holy cow.
My friend Kevin, who I mentioned earlier, we make the old stoner with, and I bought about half a ton of that. So
wow.
I've got a nice stash of Durst Turbo Pills waiting for me.
Beautiful. Oh, that's nice.
I love that stuff. Yeah.
All right, Denny, I don't know about you, but I have to pee. And,
okay, man, I got to get another beer.
All right, you grab a beer. We're going to take a quick break. We may sort of sum up batch sparging a little bit, but I got a bunch of just random brewing questions for you from all of our listeners. So we're going to do a little rapid fire with you when we get back. All right.
Okay, man.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Everybody, we'll be right back. You're tuned in to the Denny Kahn Batch Sparging Show, or as we like to call it, the Pragmatic Show, right here on the Brewing Network. Hang on a second. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
You
back to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters.
On the Brewing Network.
Well, all right. You are tuned to the Brewcasters, and it is the DennyCon Batch Sparging Show right here with the Brewcasters. The band that you just heard, I got to tell you, folks, that was the Low Haunts. I played them last week as well, and you can go to thelowhaunts.com. They're an unsigned, semi-local band. Denny, the cool thing about this band is that not only are they local to us, but half of them are local to you. The singer and the songwriter lives in Oregon, where you are, and the drummer lives in Dublin, down where we are.
Cool, man.
Yeah. In fact, they do some great stuff. The guy who writes and records and sings all the music, he's got a great, a very budget home studio, but he's so good at sort of recording that stuff that he ends up with some nice copies himself. I might give him your card there for a little mastering or whatnot, you know?
Hey, man, yeah, I'd at least love to hear his stuff. I spent many, many years playing in bands all the way from Northern California over into Idaho. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like I can relate to people trying to make it like that. That's a life and trying to be a pro brewer.
You know what? It is. It is a tough life. And this guy, he's been doing it a while too. Like I'm not going to tell you how old he is. He's been doing this thing for a long time, and he's one of those guys. I'm sorry to segue off into music here for a second, brewers, but
well, that's cool, man. Hey, that's my other life.
I know that Denny can relate, so that's what I'm doing here too. He's one of these guys. You know that you go out and you see these bands, and maybe you find them in a bar, maybe you find them at a local show, wherever you find them, and you see this band, and you go, there is no reason on this earth that I can think of that that person's music shouldn't be on the radio.
True.
Like everybody else's. And this is one of those guys. And that's just a luck of the draw. It's the way it happens. There have been a million bands that are every bit as good, if not 100% better than most of the stuff you hear on the radio, and they never make it out of the bar.
And that's one of the great things about shows like yours and the whole internet, man, is
yeah.
Now people like that get heard.
That's
and
right.
It's not like confined to just the airwaves like it used to be.
Yeah, it wakes things up. So that was the Low Haunts. You can go to thelowhaunts.com, and maybe next time I'm up visiting them, I'm going to come check in on you, Denny. We're going to have some beer.
Hey, together. Man, that would be cool. Come up and brew with me, buddy.
Yeah, that sounds like it. Where in Oregon are you exactly?
Right now, I am sitting on Poodle Creek Road outside of Notai, Oregon. It's about 25 miles west of Eugene towards the coast in the foothills of the Coast Range Mountains.
Poodle Creek?
You know what, Denny?
Did you just say Poodle
yeah.
Creek?
You did. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that there's not a place I can think of that sounds better than Poodle Creek Road right outside of Notai, Oregon. I don't know what it is, but it just sounds good.
You know, when I first moved here, I would look at Poodle Creek Road and laugh and go, who in their right mind would ever live on Poodle Creek Road? And then I ran across this beautiful 14-acre slice of heaven with 400 feet of river frontage and a building for me to brew in and everything, and it's like, man, I'm never leaving.
Wow. Denny, I might be there sooner than I thought, actually. That sounds that sounds really nice.
You don't know what you're getting into, Denny. You want to invite me, not Justin.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll ask my wife, Daniela.
Ah, see?
Damn it.
All right, you are tuned to the Brewing Network, and we've got Denny Kahn. Don't forget that next week we've got the Brothers White for the first time ever in our studio. Both Chris and Mike White from White Labs Yeast Company are going to be on the show. Now, Chris White's done the show with us before, but he's always done it via phone, and both of the White brothers are actually going to be in the studio. We're going to talk about cold pitching versus warm pitching. We're going to talk about yeast starters. We're going to talk about new products. We're going to talk about them delving into other things in the yeast world and all sorts of stuff. So make sure you tune in next week to check out the White brothers, White Labs Brewing Yeast Company, rather, right here on the Brewing Network. All right, now back to Denny. Denny, I got so many questions in front of me for you, I don't even know where to start.
Pick one, man.
Yeah, I guess that's all I got to do. How about this one? We'll stick to the batch sparging deal, so some random questions about that. People want you to discuss the reason that it looks like Bud Miller Coors, why don't they batch sparge? Why don't the BMCs do it?
That goes back to the fact that theoretically continuous sparging is more efficient.
Okay.
And believe me, guys with that much money,
have the perfect lottering system that we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
And they need to maximize every cent that they spend on ingredients and everything else. And so for batches the size that they do,
yeah.
Batch sparging, I mean, you know, again, this kind of goes back to what I said about I have no desire to be a commercial brewer, and that means that I have no reason to think I need to brew like a commercial brewer. I brew like a home brewer, and what works for me and makes good beer, and I have a good time doing.
Okay. And for them, you know, when you're brewing on that scale, like we had said, for our scale, the difference between 80% and 75% is very minimal. But on a huge scale, 5% is massive.
Yeah, exactly. 1% is massive when you're brewing on the scale that they brew, you know?
Right, right.
So again, yeah, it goes back to the fact that, you know, we're home brewers, and if you want to brew like the commercial guys do, more power to you. I don't care to do that.
All right, I got a call here, and it looks like it's from John Foster from the, he's out at the 21st Amendment anniversary party. So I got a feeling he's not actually listening to the show, Danielle. I think he just wants to call in and, like, party on the phone. Is that what it sounded like?
It looks like, and it's really loud in the background.
I don't want to take it. Can you get back on the horn with him and just tell him we're in the middle of Danny Kahn? And
sure.
I'm not going to take it because I know he's not listening and it's totally off topic.
All right.
All right. Thank you. So let's do that. So just grab the phone there and tell him what's what. And we're going to keep going on with Denny. Okay. Somebody wanted to know, Denny, do you acidify batch sparge water?
No. I don't. Basically, in batch sparging, you need to be concerned about the pH of your mash. And if you get that right, the sparge will take care of itself. I'm lucky in that for almost any style of that I brew, I don't have to do much to my water at all. If you have to with your water, then definitely do what needs to be done to your mash. But that one of the things that happens in continuous sparging, we talked earlier about how as you're rinsing the sugars out of the grain, you see the gravity of the runoff continually dropping. Well, as that gravity drops, the other thing that's happening is the pH is continually rising and getting into the area where you could possibly get tannin extraction or other undesirable things in your beer. So that's why in continuous sparging, you sometimes, or often, I don't know which one it is, need to keep an eye on the acidity of your sparge water and acidify that. In batch sparging, because you're putting all that water in there at once and then getting all the sugars into solution and draining it out, the pH stays constant throughout the entire sparge runoff, and it stays pretty much at the same pH as it was for your mash. And I realize that's hard to believe, and it was hard for me to believe until I spent a dozen or so batches measuring the pH in my runoff every time, and along with the gravity, and seeing it happen. I mean, it's like I knew the theory. People I respected told me that theory was correct. I couldn't believe it until I saw it for myself, and I did see that. So
okay,
now I just don't worry about it.
Yeah, all right. Hey, good. And you know what? The less you have to worry about, the better, if you ask me.
So that's pragmatic, man.
That's right. Okay, how about this question? And I think it has to do with some of the same things. Do you use rice hulls in any of your mash? And let's talk about what rice hulls are, if you can explain that before you answer the question, too.
Sure. Rice hulls just provide extra filter material, just kind of like when you crush your barley, you know, you want to keep the hulls somewhat intact to provide a filter to help prevent a stuck runoff. If you're having problems with sticking, you can add extra rice hulls, barley hulls, oat hulls. There's a number of things.
Okay.
They're flavorless. They don't add anything other than the extra filter material. I've discovered you do kind of have to pre-soak them, or they'll suck up more of your mash water than you want to even think about.
Oh, okay. And they don't change the pH either?
They don't do anything, man, other than just provide more filter material and suck up mash water if you don't pre-soak them, which I discovered the hard way.
Okay.
I don't normally use them because, again, I just don't get stuck runoff.
Okay.
If I did, I would. Now, there's a caveat here. I don't make a lot of wheat beers because I'm just not a wheat beer kind of guy.
All right. See,
people who are online know that about me. It's one of my dirty secrets.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do make an occasional wit, and even for a wit beer, I have never found a need to use them. And again, being pragmatic, if I started having spec runoffs, that's one of the first things I'd go to trying.
Yeah.
Until I do, I don't see a reason to myself. But if you guys out there are having problems, a handful in your mash can certainly be a help.
Right. Okay. Daniela, are you seeing a correlation here? Are you realizing that Denny is he's like me, except that he's good at it? Except that because he's a hippie. He's pragmatic.
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't like wheat beer.
Yeah.
Everyone knows I can't drink the wheat beer.
Yes, that's my man.
I know. You see what I'm saying? Like, Denny, I think you're my long lost brother or something.
It almost sounds like
father.
Yes. Who knows? But what I'm saying is the only difference so far is that you know what you're talking about. Like, that seems to be
and
the
main. His product is good.
Yeah. And his product is good.
I think the difference is about 225 batches of beer, Justin. I mean,
that's it. I'll tell you what. If I got Denny Kahn in my future, if all it takes is 225 batches and to be at the level there, then I'll tell you what. I got nothing. I got no complaints about that.
Oh yeah.
there's lots of people out there who make beer as good as mine or better than mine, and all it takes is just practice and paying attention.
Yeah.
Somebody's saying you're like Denny, but Denny is smart.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's my point. Someone in the chat room is saying
that. Thank you, Daniel. I'll send you your check.
Am I invited for brewing now, Denny?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
It's just funny because I'm listening to all these things, and he's on a whatever system he can get. He's not great at building all of the,
right.
all the thing, or he doesn't want to be bothered with it, with
right.
building all of the different things you got to build. The simpler the better. You know, see what I'm saying here?
Yeah. But now you are actually smart, too, because you have Dr. Scott for building the things for you.
Yeah.
You got Jamil for the good advice. You call up Denny for some other advice, you know, so you're not that dumb, actually.
You see that,
Denny? You just don't know how to do it yourself.
Well, that's true, man. You know, smart is as smart does.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I do want to mention really quickly, now you say you have no problem with stuck sparges, but that is an issue I've heard with batch sparging. And the reason is because, like you said earlier, you're just, you know, you're dumping out that first wort as fast as you can, which doesn't, I guess, mean that you open the valve as fast as you can. You're doing it as fast as you can without getting a stuck sparge. But it is a risk, right? When you run off faster, you're risking getting a stuck.
Yes, and it's one of those things you have to learn about your system. And that's why I always say to people, you run off as fast as your system will allow you to run off.
Okay.
When I'm doing a batch, like say today, my Vorloff takes me about 2 to 3 minutes.
Wow.
And then to run off the 3.7 gallons of wort in my mash for the first runoff takes another 3 to 5 minutes.
Okay. Wow, that's quick.
Yeah, and so then I get my batch sparge water in, another 2 or 3 minutes for the Vorloff, another 3 to 5 minutes. So my entire runoff from the end of mash to the time I start my boil, the entire runoff and sparge process takes maybe 20 minutes or so, as compared to, say, 45 minutes to an hour when you're doing a continuous sparge where you need to go slowly to rinse those sugars out of the grain.
So if it only takes 20 minutes, and how long are you letting that batch, when you throw your sparge water in there, how long is that sitting?
Not at all.
Just long enough to stir it up and recirc.
And then it go, yes. When I learned batch sparging, I think that, it was Ken Schwartz on his website, said to put that water in there, let it sit for 10 minutes, stir it thoroughly, then boil off and run off. And I did that for years.
Okay.
Then Bob Regent from San Francisco, who is another one of the early proponents of batch sparging that I had learned immense amounts from, posted on Rec Crafts Brewing News Group that he just puts the water in, stirs it, and runs it off and doesn't let it sit at all, because what's the point in letting it sit? Conversion is done. It's the stirring that makes the difference in getting the sugars into solution into the water.
Sure.
So I went, damn, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I tried it, and sure enough, it didn't affect my efficiency, and it saved me another 10 minutes.
Right. So the key is that you're just rinsing and getting the sugars into solution and dumping them right back out.
Yeah, so there's nothing to be gained by letting it sit. Now, there are people who still like to do that. As a matter of fact, I haven't changed the instructions on my website, so it still says to do that. But it's really not necessary. There's nothing really to be gained from it. There's no harm in doing it. But it's just not a necessary step.
Okay. So before I move on to some of the other questions we have about other topics, then let me throw this question at you, and you can use it sort of as a summary of why you like batch sparging so much. So the question that came through from the chat room is basically, what are the apparent benefits to batch sparging as you see it? And then maybe use that just as a point to say this is the point of batch sparging.
I like the as you see it, because this is going to be, you know, particular to everybody's point of, I mean, everybody brews for different reasons and gets different things out of it.
Yeah.
For me, the benefit of batch sparging is I don't need to spend money on equipment that I can do without.
Okay.
To me, it's faster, it's easier, and it's more fun. And I say that from coming from a standpoint of when I tried fly sparging, you know, I didn't have a nice system like you do, you know, although I know people who have those beautiful Moorbeer systems and stuff and who do batch sparge on them, and that works great too.
Sure.
But you for fly sparging, you pretty much need more equipment than you do for batch sparging, and I didn't want to make the investment in the equipment, and I'm just not an equipment geek. I'm the kind of guy who just likes to get out there and make beer.
That's fair, yeah.
You know?
Okay. And that it works for you. You haven't noticed, in fact, you noticed an increased efficiency, and it just kind of rocks and rolls for you.
Well, you know, and people don't tell me my beers suck.
That helps.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's like if people, you know, it's like I've heard, there was somebody in one of the discussion groups who said that they mentioned their local homebrew shop owner that they had sparging, and the person at the homebrew shop said, oh, that makes dirty beer.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know what that means.
It's like, you know, it's like if people were saying to me, boy, you know, Danny, there's something wrong with your beers. You might want to, like, reconsider your sparging technique.
Right.
Then
right.
I probably would.
Sure.
But as long as that doesn't happen and people like my beers and, you know, then I figure there can't be anything wrong with it.
Plus, not everything that's dirty is bad. Like, let's take dirty movies, for example. There's nothing wrong with those. So, I mean, for them saying that they're dirty beers, it doesn't mean they're being negative.
True.
You know.
That's the way I took it.
So. Yeah, you took it. Of course you did. You're my long-lost brother.
That's right. There may be a difference between dirty beers and dirty movies.
Maybe, but I'm not sure I want to find out what that difference is.
Yeah, we won't go there.
A quick note came through from the chat room. Somebody who apparently knows the deal. They want me to give the correct date for Hop Madness.
Yeah.
And it's August 26th and August 27th. That Danny
Thank
was
very
talking.
Much.
Yeah, they were talking about up there. It's there in Oregon, August 26th, August 27th, and it's a great festival. We had somebody call in from the homebrew club that runs it. It was a long time ago, so I don't even remember who it was exactly. But they told us all about the whole thing, and it was just it sounds like just a great festival. So, Hop Madness, August 26th and 27th.
Thank you for correcting the date.
Yes, no worries there. Okay, how about this question? And this is a very general question. It goes back to the show that we did a couple of weeks ago, but I'm going to throw it on you, Denny. The question from the chat room says, my buddy taught me how to brew extract, and he has since moved away. I now want to go all grain. Can I go all grain without somebody showing me how to do it? And I think that's a good question.
I had no one to show me how to do it, so I guess the answer is yes, you certainly can.
Yeah.
I had never seen an all-grain brew when I did it before. I read about it on the internet. I mean, I was lucky that within about 3 weeks of the time I did my first extract brew, I ran across the Rec Crafts Brewing News Group, and that referred me to other resources. Since then, it's just grown, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of resources out there, and you can definitely do your first all grain brew without anybody showing you how, especially if you've done extract brewing before.
Yeah.
Because
extract brewing teaches you the basics. And once you get past the mash part of all grain brewing, it's exactly the same.
That's right. In fact, I think it's easier once you get past the mash part, because you don't have to bring to a boil, stop, add extract, stir it in, and then bring to a boil again. Like, there's actually an extra step in brewing extract, in having to stop and add the extract so you don't burn it on the bottom and that whole bit.
Right.
So you're right, Denny. Once you get past the mash, it's actually, I think, even easier to do.
And people just, I always tell people who are about to do their first all grain brew, just don't get freaked out.
Yeah.
Relax and enjoy it. It's going to happen. Again, going back to Dan Listerman's thing, malted barley wants to become beer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you do your first all grain brew and you're shooting for a 153 mash temperature and you hit 148, it's fine. You know,
what if you're shooting for 148 and you hit 142, Denny? Not that that's ever happened to me.
in that case, Justin, I recommend calling Jamil.
That's what my listener said, too. He said, why didn't you call Jamil? Well, I'm going to run with this for a second and answer the question as well, because I got to be honest about it. No, I don't think that you necessarily need someone to show you how to do all grain. I like Denny's philosophy that, you know, don't get freaked out about it. Just do it. If you've read about it and if you've listened to a couple of the shows, you know how to do it. In fact, I would say go back and listen to our first all-grain show. We did a whole show about how to go all-grain, and it's there in our archives, and check it out. That's really going to take you a long way. The other thing I'd recommend is John Palmer's book here, How to Brew. That's going to take you a long way. There are some things that it would absolutely help if you had someone there to help you or show you how to do it, but you're going to get to learn it anyway. Like, you really will kind of figure it out a couple of batches into it. On top of that, there is a video out there that I know of that it's one of our listeners, so I really like it, and I want to mention this. It's at crotchrot.com. Now, I know that sounds like it's going to get you in trouble with your wife, but I guarantee you it won't. It's an all-brewing website. It's crotchrot.com. And he, a listener from since the beginning, he put out a video showing you how to go all-grain. And it's a cool video. It's not very long, and it's well-produced, and he's out there in his backyard, and he's doing the whole thing. And he's on a very basic system, just like you'd find Denny or myself on. He's using a cooler. He's not using a B3 giant automated system. And that is actually a video that you can watch what's happening. So I'm going to go ahead and say that, along with Denny, no, you don't have to have somebody there to help you. Check out the video at crotchrot.com. Read John Palmer a little bit. Listen to the All Grain Show, and you're going to do fine. Chances are you're going to screw a couple of things up. Like Denny said, you're going to miss your strike temperature like I did, and you might miss your gravity, and you might miss a few things, but you're still going to make a pretty decent beer. So don't be afraid to go.
Definitely take really good notes so that next time you can say, okay, I was going for 148, I hit 142, let's go 6 degrees hotter on the strike water and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's a good idea, and that's something I suck at, too, is taking the good notes. Yeah, I've gotten better at it. Because of advice like that been given to me. But you're right. Because you want to know, the difference between what you did wrong and then the next time what you did right. And the only way you're going to know that is if you took good notes.
Yeah, so. I've got a computer out in my brewery so I can run ProMash, and I keep extensive notes and spiral binders at the same time.
Beautiful.
You know, and it's just invaluable, man, when you're looking back at something years later and go, boy, how can I make that better, you know?
Denny's right. Remember, he's like me, except he knows what the hell he's talking about. So, listen to the man. Okay, let's go to some random questions I got here coming at you. This one, people want to know how you measure the water in your kettle. So that's a good. What kind of kettle are you using?
I have two. For heating water, I use a 7.5-gallon aluminum pot that came with my original turkey fryer setup.
Beautiful.
And for boiling, I have both a 13.5-gallon and a 15.5-gallon converted keg. I use the smaller one for the 5-gallon batches that I normally do. And many years ago, in one of those homebrew contests that I entered, I won a wooden paddle for stirring. So what I did was I dumped water into both of those pots, 1/2 gallon at a time, and I marked one side of that paddle with red marks for the converted keg and the other side with black marks for the 7.5 gallon pot, and I just stick them in and see how much I got.
All right. Easy, right? Okay. I've gotten...
Cheap and easy, man.
Cheap and easy. That's the way we like it. Just like our dirty movies. Cheap and easy.
That's right.
That's okay. Me. Here's a question that I've gotten twice now for you. And it starts okay. out mentioning your sideburns. They're calling you Mr. Sideburns, Denny. they're making.
I have a beard.
Yeah, I think they're just making fun of your hippiness and thinking that your beard actually is sideburns. But they're not sideburns if it's connected to a beard, folks.
Just like you, Justin.
That's right.
That's right.
They're only sideburns if you chop off the beard part of it.
Yeah.
But otherwise.
I did that in high school.
And not since then?
It's been 40 years.
That's awesome.
You know, it's kind of awesome. My dad's like that too, Denny, and I've had a beard now for a few years. I've not cut it off. You know what worries me is that I'm going to do the same thing, and 40 years down the road, I'm still going to have this beard, and what the hell is under that thing? You see what I'm saying, Denny? Like, does it ever bother you that you wonder what's under that thing?
25 years ago, I shaved it off. My wife was out. She came in. She looked at me, did a double take, screamed, and wouldn't look at me again until I grew it back.
See, and I can relate to that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to look at Justin either without his beard.
Yeah, it's a scary thing.
Yeah, I came to the conclusion that the less of my face you can see, the better it is.
And I think that that's what it is that happens to those of us who grow beards and keep them for so long.
You guys are brothers.
That we realize that. We go, okay, I'm ugly. And
I can live with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm old enough now to realize that I am, and it's okay.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, the question goes, Mr. Sideburns, they say, but they really want to know about first wort hopping.
Yeah.
And I know this is a whole discussion that we could have, but first of all, what is first wort hopping, and describe us how we do that.
First wort hopping is adding a portion of your hop charge to the initial runoff from the mash tun and leaving it in throughout the rest of the boil. When I first heard about it, it was touted as a way to add great hop aroma to your beer. When I tried it, I got no aroma from it whatsoever, but I just got incredibly great hop flavor.
Okay.
So this is one area where I decided, well, you know, I know that George Fix is a great guy, and he knows a lot of stuff, but if my experience disagrees with him, I got to go with my experience. So I use first wort hopping for aroma, or for flavor in beers, for hop flavor in beers.
Yeah.
First wort hopping also, contrary to what you might think, provides a very smooth, mellow addition to the bitterness of beers. And I don't know the exact chemistry, and I don't know if anyone does really, but basically what happens is that even though the hops for the entire 60 minutes of the boil, they don't contribute the same amount of bittering as a regular 60-minute addition would.
Really?
And the bitterness they do contribute is a very smooth, mellow bitterness. So I've been experimenting recently with making a number of IPAs with only one hop variety and doing nothing but first wort hopping and dry hopping them.
Okay.
I use the first wort hopping both for the, I use a huge amount of first wort hops so I can get a good amount of bitterness, and then that also contributes a large amount of flavor, and then I dry hop them afterwards.
All right.
Now, one thing I mentioned earlier was that John Palmer says, as does George Fix and a couple other people, that first wort hopping should only be done with low alpha noble hops. Well, of course, when I hear something like that, it's like, what do you mean?
It's like a challenge.
So, exactly. So, you know, I've done it with, 12% Simcoes and 17% Columbus and, you know, 15% Chinooks and stuff like that. And I just love them all.
Okay.
And, you know, so I think that a lot of that depends on, you know, what you're looking for in a beer. Obviously, it's dependent on your own taste.
Sure.
But first wort hopping is a great way to get a really forward hop flavor into the beer and make a really nice, smooth, bittering addition also.
And now, when you say you take it on your first running, so you add it, you're adding it to the kettle, not the mash tun. You're taking your wort out of out of the mash tun, you're putting it into your kettle, and that's where you put those hops in before you've ever brought it to a boil?
Exactly. I mean, okay. For example, when I made the rye IPA today, it takes an ounce of Mount Hood's first wort hops for 5 gallons. And so as soon as I started, I finished the boil off, started redirecting the wort into the kettle, and I threw in the ounce of Mount Hood's and just let them steep in there throughout the runoff, throughout the sparge runoff, and then they were in there through the boil.
Gotcha. So you do it from your first runoff, then you still do your batch sparge, and your hops are sitting in there as you're doing your batch sparge.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And
okay.
Apparently some sort of chemical reaction is happening as they sit there that kind of fixes the alpha acid so that they don't give you as much bittering as they would if you tossed them into the boil for 60 minutes.
Okay.
It's juju, man, but it works.
Hey, you know what? There's nothing wrong with a little juju in brewing. I like that, actually. So
that's right.
Okay, and then you just end up with just a nice, smooth, hot flavor out of it. I like that.
Great hot flavor. I love it. I use it in IPAs, pale ales, pilsners, alt beers. It's just killer in a German pilsner. It's a really great technique.
Okay, great. I like it. Okay, how about this question now? And we're going to try to get through because I got a few things. I still want to do a couple recipes with you, Denny. So let me try to get through a few of these questions and then get to recipes before it gets too late, too, and then we can get out of here. Someone wanted to know, and this came through much earlier in the show, another type of sparging is actually not to sparge. You got your fly sparge, you got your batch sparge, you got all these different ways, and one of them is to not sparge at all. So in the no sparge method, you basically are getting your entire wort out of your mash. You do your initial strike, and you do your mash, and you get your wort out, and that's it. You're done. You're not rinsing it. You're not batching it. You're not doing anything, just so you all know. The question then, Denny, for you is, do you have any tips for no-sparge brews about how to get the most out of it? Anything you got there?
You know, not really. You know, like I said, about the only time I do a no-sparge brew is when I do a party guile for our barley wine.
Right.
I would say... If you want to do a no sparge brew, and there's a lot of guys who do that because they would rather spend the extra money on grain than spend the extra time doing the sparge.
Sure,
that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just expect a low efficiency. You mentioned that John Palmer had quoted around 65% for no sparge.
That's right. Yeah.
My experience is closer to 55%.
Okay.
So just be prepared for a low efficiency, and other than that, I mean, I know it's a very controversial point, but my gut feeling is that the less you sparge, the better quality your beer is going to be.
See, and that's kind of the theory about the no sparge.
This is so subjective that I would never try and convince somebody that I could really tell a difference, but I think from my gut feeling is that batch sparge beers are better than fly sparge beers, and no sparge beers are better than batch sparge beers.
Yeah.
But I'm not willing to take a 30% hit in efficiency every brew to make a no sparge beer.
To prove it.
So I consider batch sparging to be a really good middle point, you know?
It's a fair compromise.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you, I had not thought about no sparging because I'd never, until I read John Palmer's book, I just hadn't thought about it even as an option. And the way that John describes it is he basically says, hey, you know, if you want the most sort of out of your grain, you're going to get it right at the beginning. The reason that we sparge is to increase our efficiency based on grain. So he says that,
right.
Look, a professional brewer is never going to no sparge, essentially. They're never going to know sparge because they can't afford to do it. You're talking about huge amounts of grain here, and to them it matters. So when they have to add 5% of grain, you're talking about $200 to $500 to $1,000. You know, it depends on the brewery, doesn't it? But a microbrewer, let's just take your local microbrew. So even the smallest microbrewer that you can think of, to do a no sparge, you're talking about $500 for just a few, you know, for the extra efficiency. Whereas a home brewer, we don't have to think about that necessarily. If you're willing to spend the extra few bucks on grain and you have a large enough mash vessel to do it, you could easily do a no sparge. And the idea, just like Denny says, is that it's probably a better way to get your wort out, because you're hitting the grain with the water. You got your wort, and that's it. You're done. It's a one-time deal. You're not rinsing. You're not getting astringency. You're not doing any of the other things that happen with, improper rinsing and batch sparging and whatnot. But it still kind of blows my mind that I would just do that, Denny. To be honest, I couldn't picture myself buying that much grain and just doing a one-off thing, because I would just not for any reason other than I would feel really uncomfortable about it. It's like I'm missing a step.
Well, I understand, man. It like kind of offends everybody's sense of frugality to do
that.
But on the other hand, I really recommend everybody try it once to see.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how the hell are you going to know otherwise?
You're right. You're absolutely right.
That's how I learned about brewing. That's how I advise everybody to learn about brewing. Absorb information from people. Anything that makes sense, try it for yourself and see what you think. And if it works for you, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Pragmatic, right?
That's right, pragmatic. And then, just the no sparge thing is just it's a very interesting, yet it makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? Because you just add water, and you get the wort out, and that's it. Like, that's your wort. And it really makes a ton of sense. You're just talking about efficiency and costs, you know. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's worth a try for anybody who's interested.
I agree with you. I think, especially as a... Especially you pointing out that batch sparging is this great sort of compromise and this in-between. I think to figure that out for yourself, it's a great thing to do. Do the no sparge batch. And then do the batch sparge.
Right.
And then do a fly sparge. And it really would be interesting to find out how the exact same beer, the exact same recipe, turned out depending on the three things that you did, you know.
I think so too, man. I agree. Everybody should, if you're interested in comparing the methods, the best thing to do is compare them for yourself, not take anybody else's word for it.
Yeah.
Even mine.
even Denny's. You know, we come up with these ideas, like you've just said on here too, Denny, about experimenting and trying things out. All the time we come up with these ideas on the show about how let's test things, let's do these experiments, or we're going to talk about it next week when we got White Labs in here about an experiment that we're going to try with them. And there's just not enough time and not enough manpower for us to do it. I think we need to have a Brewing Network, a volunteer experiment group. Kind of like the volunteer fire department.
Cool.
And we get a bunch of guys, and we gotta get the guys who we know, they know their system already, they've been doing it for a while, so they have they have consistency going for them. And Denny, you'd be perfect for this, because you know, when you brew, you hit your numbers every time, it's a consistent thing. Jameel is perfect for it. We need this volunteer experiment department so that we can sort of do these experiments for people like we're talking about, and then talk about them on the air. Which isn't to say people shouldn't do them themselves. I don't want to take the place of that, but I want to be able to talk about what happens. So I might have to start a brewing and network experiment team.
You know, man, if Jamil's in, I'm in. He and I were talking about something kind of similar at NHC, and I think that'd be way cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have the resources, we have the listeners to do it, and it'd be great to throw it out there for them. And what we do is once every few months kind of throw out this experiment, and we give a recipe, say, for example. Let's, for example, we're going to do what you just said. So we give one recipe, and we have the experiment team go through a no sparge, a batch sparge, and a fly sparge, and then give the numbers back to us. And then we could sort of average out the numbers, and it's sort of a more efficient way to experiment because we've got a bunch of people to do it than it is on an individual basis, and we can kind of throw the numbers out there.
Better than numbers, have the experimenters then send you the beers for in-store tasting.
Well, I think that's a given, Denny. Yeah.
How could I be so naive?
Yes. I mean, I didn't say it, but I just assumed that we'd have gallons and gallons of beer sitting in the studio here from all the experiments. In fact, that was the point of my conversation.
Very clever.
Yeah. Okay. How about this? If you could quickly give us, again, a question from the chat room, your opinion on decoction mashing.
Oh, man.
I know. That's a, that's
oh,
a,
man.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
I don't want to go here. People who know me know that a couple years ago, I
got a bunch of brewers together to perform an experiment to find out what kind of effects decoctions had on beers, if they had any effect at all.
Oh, wow.
Let me just say that I learned a lot from the experiment, and that I would encourage everyone who is interested to do exactly the same recipe as a decocted recipe and as a non-decocted recipe and decide for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
I got a lot of good info. I learned a lot, but I also took a lot of flack from people who, I mean, basically what 42 tasters told me was that there was no clear preference for decocted beers, and most, and the majority couldn't detect and didn't prefer a decocted beer.
Wow.
But people don't seem to want to accept that data. So
of course not.
I'm just kind of letting it go.
Yeah, you know, okay. Well, that's fair, Denny. I appreciate your diplomacy, and at the same time, as you're saying it, I'm thinking that there are German brewers everywhere that are turning over in their graves, and that might be...
No, they're not, actually. I have information that a brewer at Weinsteffen, they did a similar experiment, and they came back with similar results to mine.
Is that right?
The latest edition of Brauwelt International, they did an experiment on decocted beers, and they found no clear preference for decocted beers.
No kidding.
Let's just leave it at that, huh?
Okay, absolutely. Well, let me ask you this, though. So, leaving it at that and without dragging it all out, is it safe to say, Denny, it sounds like you've maybe caught a lot of flack for your opinion and your results of that experiment?
Yeah, that's very true.
Okay. Yes. Well, fair enough. And that would make sense because decoction is a very old method. And, hey, old habits die hard, Denny. So,
when I was researching all this, I ran across a guy on the Pro Brewer Forum who decocts beers at his brewery and doesn't really think that it makes any difference, but he said that he's reluctant to admit that it doesn't make a difference after going to all that work.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that maybe has something to do with it.
Yeah, sure. And that would have a lot to do with it, I would think. Okay, how about this? Totally off topic, another subject entirely. Question from the chat room. Denny, what are your favorite hops to use right now?
Oh, man.
Tough one, huh?
Yeah, it is, because I don't really have a favorite. I'm trying to use up my crop of homegrown Cascades from last year, because this year's are ready to harvest, and I got to get out there and get them. I still have about half a pound left from last year.
Wow, how many plants do you have on your 14 acres
just,
there?
I just have one Cascade plant. It's back in the garden growing along our 6-foot-high deer fence, and my lovely wife takes care of doing all the watering and stuff, so I get to pretty much ignore it.
Oh, that's great.
And I go out and pick them. But she loves Cascade hops, so I brewed the beer she likes with them. So anyway, right now Cascades are a favorite. I always love Columbus and Mount Hood. I always have Spalts around.
I've never used that hop. Not yet.
Oh, man. I got into using them for alt beers, and I discovered that it's just a killer all-purpose noble hop for pretty much any kind of German lager. It works great in Belgian beers.
And is it an all-around, like bittering to aroma? You can use it for every part?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Definitely.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's kind of like Hallertauer, but with a bit more spice to it. I really like it. It's a great hop.
Daniela, have you heard of this one, the Spalt?
No, I haven't.
Is it Spalt?
Spalt. It will be Spalt.
Spalt. You know how I just pointed out to myself that I've not used it that I've never used it is again reading through all those Charlie Papazian recipes. There was a few of them in there that wanted to use the Spalt hops. And as Denny just said, I was looking through about 3 different Altbier recipes, and they all had Spalt in there.
There you go.
It's the classic Dusseldorfer Alt hop.
Okay.
Nice.
Oh, there you go.
Sounds tasty.
Daniela's dad in Germany, there, he loves the alt beer, so he's probably a big fan of the Spalt too, and doesn't even know it. Yeah,
it was alt beer that got me into all grain brewing.
Okay. Oh, is that right?
My dad did?
No, Altbier did.
Oh, I see.
Wow, that'd be cool.
Yeah, your dad's global, Daniela.
Apparently.
How about that?
He has a second life.
You know what's funny, Denny, is that I bet you that you don't drink any more or less Altbier than Daniela's father does. He lives in Bavaria and only has Alt when he travels up to Dusseldorf. It's not exactly you won't find it on tap throughout Germany. You might find it in the bottle, but you certainly won't find it on tap unless you're in Dusseldorf.
Yeah, so. that does not at all surprise me. I'm consider myself fortunate that we've finally had some good ones start showing up over here.
Yeah,
it's really, in Germany, beer stays very regional if it's really good beer. It's really surprising, actually. We've talked about this on the show a lot, but it stays regional. You drink it where it comes from, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, I don't know.
And isn't that what it's all about?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You just ask Brian Hunt. It's definitely about the regions and keeping it at home, you know? Okay, how about this? A couple last questions for you. People who know you, obviously, and you can go look at Denny's system. Daniela, did you type that into the chat room
several
for everybody?
Times, yeah, but I'll do it one more time.
Okay, it's hbd.org/cascade/Denny Brew. And you can look at his system. The question from the chat room about your system, Denny, is have you made any upgrades or are you still keeping it ghetto? They want to know.
Totally ghetto, man.
Good for you.
If you look at that website, there is not a piece that has changed since that day.
Yeah.
With the only exception is that back when I posted that, I was using Carboys, and I no longer do that.
Now, that's a good question, and it's going to open a can of worms. Before I ask you that, I'm not looking at your system. What are you using as a wort chiller? How are you chilling your wort?
A 50-foot piece of 3/8-inch copper tubing coiled for an immersion chiller.
You just go straight immersion?
Yep.
How long does it take you to cool it down, and what are you cooling it to? I'm curious because I want to relate it to my own system.
Today, the ambient temperature today was in the mid to upper 80s.
Okay.
I cooled my wort down to about 62. I let it run for about half an hour or so, but it might have been done before that because I was out working in the garden while it was cooling and not really paying any attention. But say, you know, in 30 minutes it went from boiling to 62 on an 88 ambient day.
Now, do you go in there during that period and whirlpool it?
Not so much whirlpool as stir. I'm not trying to accomplish a whirlpool.
You're just stirring it up.
I just stir it to get some convection action going there and, you know, and equalize the temperatures and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I try and do that every, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, something like that.
Okay.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, the more you do it, the faster it cools. So whatever I get around to doing.
See, I think that's the key because I wasn't doing the stir thing for a while. I thought, hey, throw that sucker in, you're going to be just fine. And I was getting down to 80 degrees in about 45 minutes, and that's it. I couldn't get lower until, you know, I woke up a little bit and realized you got to go in there and stir that sucker up because if the wort is still, then obviously only the 2 inches from either side of the chiller are what's cooling, and the rest of the thing is hot as hell. So you got to keep going in there and stirring. And I did that last time, although I've still not been able to get I use an immersion too, and I've still not get. I can't get below 70, even with the stirring.
Well,
could be conquered.
It could be where you live. I mean, I live out in the in the foothills of the mountains, and I have a well that goes down and has pretty cool water almost all the year long. So that's a real advantage for me.
Yeah,
you know?
That the cold water's got to help.
And it's just, you know, I had a counterflow chiller at one point, and I used it a few times, and the time it was taking me to sanitize the counterflow was taking me longer than it was to use an immersion chiller, so it's like, thank you, this is gone.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, last question for you, Denny. No promises, though. But the last one I got in my hand here, and we just were about to open the can of worms a second ago, so let's do it quickly. People want to know about your opinion about fermenting in either glass or plastic. And I spoke to you earlier before the show, so you had mentioned that you did glass for a long time and now you're plastic. So give us your experience and what do you think, glass versus plastic for fermenting?
you know, it's kind of like continuous versus fly sparging. You can do what you want, and they're both fine. The bottom line that I found is that there's no downside to plastic. I used nothing but glass for the first seven and a half years I was brewing. They're great. They have all these advantages. They do the lava lamp effect. You can watch the fermentation, yada, yada. And then one day I was brewing a batch of double-decocted Pilsner, and I was going to use the yeast cake from another batch of double-decocted Pilsner. And long story short, in the process of racking beers and transferring, getting ready to reuse the yeast cake, I not only broke the carboy with the original 5 gallons of Pilsner I was going to use the yeast cake from, I broke the carboy that had the second 5 gallons of Pilsner and lost a gallon and a half of that. So I lost 6.5 gallons of double-decocted pils by breaking 2 carboys within a 3-hour period when I was completely sober and being extremely careful with them.
Wow.
Proving that shit happens.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah.
You know, and at that point I said to myself, okay, fine, I've got like a dozen carboys here, I'm done with them, I'm going to buckets. Right. So I started I do my primaries now in either buckets or 10-gallon cornies, and I do my secondary when I do a secondary in a 5-gallon corny. And I couldn't be happier about it. I have had absolutely no problems using buckets. They're cheaper to buy. You can stack them all up in one place to store them, so they take up a lot less room to store. They're more impervious to light. I just have not found anything wrong with using buckets.
You've not had any trouble with contamination or in flavors? You've been fine all the way through?
Yep, completely. Okay. No issues whatsoever.
There you go. You got it right from the Denny. Other people disagree with you. You know that, Denny.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and it's like, you know, I'm not God. They can disagree with me.
Now, that's a modest thing to say.
Sure.
I'm not God.
Yeah, right. One of my friends claims I'm a minor deity, but that's about it.
That's right. I've given you the name Homebrew Royalty, but I didn't throw deity in there yet, people. Although, you got to leave that to the listeners. You never know what they're going to say.
Yeah, right. I think Homebrew Bozo is pretty appropriate, actually.
Well, I got to say that I wish I might talk to you some more. I think on your next visit we're going to talk more about this plastic versus glass. Because I got to tell you, I'm not so concerned about the breaking thing. Although I'm in the same boat as you are. Like, you went for years and years and never broke anything. And then when you did, you switched over. And I've not broken anything yet, so I have no reason. My biggest complaint about the glass... And I'm sure you know this, and everybody who uses glass knows it. What a pain in the ass it is to clean. Because you can only get in there with the brushes, right? And
buckets are so easy, man.
Yeah, you just open the top and you reach right in and you're done. So
use a sponge. Soak them in OxyClean for a while, then wipe them off with a sponge. Boom, I'm done.
Yeah. See, I like that idea. I'm still nervous about, especially because I'm a germ freak in general, which is why I've not had contamination problems with my beer, because I'm such a germ freak. But you know what they talk about. They say that the plastic gets, it has abrasions, and then and it imparts flavors from your last beer.
Oh, come on, Bollocks.
I have not found that to be true, and even if it does, then you go out and you spend another $6 for a new bucket.
Exactly.
You know, after you've done $50. I mean, the thing that finally convinced me was I had several friends who came home with NHC gold medals for beers fermented in plastic buckets.
There you go.
And it's like, being pragmatic, you cannot deny the results.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think you've convinced Daniela, because she's like, she looks, got this look on her face like she's going to go throw my glass carboys in the gutter.
Because I think they are dangerous, and every time I touch one, you almost freak out, because you know that they break easily, and they can really mess you up if they do. And I think, why not go with plastic?
Yeah.
It works in cooking for me too, you know, to store things and everything. It doesn't take the flavor necessarily.
Yeah, well, you know, this is another case where you need to try it for yourself and prove it to yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, except that proving it to yourself here might mean stitches.
No, prove the plastic to yourself.
Yeah.
Get a bucket, man. Go spend $6, get a bucket, ferment beer in it, and when it tastes as good as any other beer you made in glass, then you'll see.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. An excellent point. All right, so Danielle, are you doing your next batch in a bucket?
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Look at you,
Danielle. Danny knows what he's talking. I'm happy to take on good advice from people who have brewed 250 batches, whereas I have brewed 3.
Yeah, but you're a Jameel fanatic, too. So when Jameel comes in here next week and tells you to use glass, what are you going to say then?
I'm going to tell him, look, Jameel, I'm sorry, but I think Danny has a good point there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell Jameel.
Well,
you hear that, Danny?
You know... believe me, I have a great amount of respect for Jameel. He's a great guy.
Now, fuck that guy, Denny. This is the Denny show.
Different one. Okay, great. I thought you were talking. He and I have disagreed on a number of points, and I think that we both respect each other enough to realize that when we disagree, that there's something there to experiment.
Absolutely.
So, Daniela, I think what you should do is ferment in plastic and make him drink the beer and say, okay, does this suck or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's never going to say it sucks.
No, he'll say, if it does, he'll say it.
That's a good idea, Danielle. Do
what?
That's a great idea,
sure.
Danny. You know that Danielle is a silver medal winner.
Oh, don't pry with that.
Really?
Yeah. Her first beer that she ever entered in a competition won the silver medal. And,
way to go.
She got 39 points on that bad boy.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah. I know. How rough is that?
So I
think it's a great idea that you say you put that award winning recipe into a plastic bucket and hand it over to Jameel and see what he has to say then.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Do it, please. Do it, and let me know what happens.
Yeah. I will.
Now, that's the great thing about guys like Denny and Jameel coming in here is that they speak from experience. When
exactly.
They come in here, they're not talking about, hey, I read this thing about plastic. They're both speaking from experience, and they both have a lot to say about what they've brewed. And the best advice that they always give is to do it yourself, and I like that. I respect that about you guys.
And brewing beer is very much a thing of experience. I mean, beer has been brewed for thousands of years, and it got better, right?
Yeah.
So listen to the elderly.
That's right.
She just called you the elderly. She didn't mean that, Danny.
Hey, man, you've seen me. I'm elderly.
Daniela, okay, in English, you say listen to your elders.
Oh.
You don't say listen to the elderly.
Well, that's what I meant to
say. No, man.
I got lost in translation.
Babe, you know? She was right the first time.
Denny, do you ever come to Northern California?
I very, very seldom travel. I basically hate traveling, and this is such a beautiful place. I love it here. But, man, if I come down there, I'm coming by to see you.
Yeah, we got to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Love to have you in here. And
I
want you to co-host with us, too. I think not only are you a great guest, but you have a lot of input as a co-host when we have other guests in here talking about things. So I might try to get you on Skype as a co-host, but I sure would love to have you in the studio. That's why I'm asking.
Hey, you know, if it works, I'd love to do it. You know, we'll see what happens.
I
still want to do the Palmer Smackdown.
I know. I like that, too. That's a great idea. I like that Denny, too. He's like, he's a hermit. He's like, I'm a hippie, and I got a great plot of land here, and I'm comfortable, and my beer's on tap. Why am I going to go anywhere?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Somebody in a chat room suggested we should be broadcasting from Danny's house, actually, from his brew house.
I think that actually is, it sounds to me like that's a more viable option, is that we head up there for a show rather than you head down here. So maybe
once I get beyond a 26K dial-up connection, you're on.
All right, yeah, he's out in the sticks, so you have to get a satellite or something.
Yeah, right.
Okay, let's do this, Denny. Before we let you go, we're coming to the end of the show. I want to wrap up a batch sparging, so I want to. I know we've done it. I want to give some main points again. Let's just cover this. A question that came through earlier that we did answer, but I'm going to ask it again, specifically from the chat room. Does the amount of water that you're using matter when you're batch sparging?
The amount of water only matters to your, the amount of sparge water only matters to to your boil volume.
Okay.
Mash with your normal liquor to grist ratio.
Okay.
And then use enough sparge water to get to the boil volume you need to have for your system.
Okay. And then you like to let your batch sit for 60 minutes, a longer if
right.
it's going to be a heavier beer.
Longer if you want more fermentability out of the beer. You know, if you want a more fermentable mash, a lower finishing gravity, let it sit a little bit longer. That'll help a little bit.
Okay.
Mash temperature is the main variable in that, but mash length also makes some difference.
Okay. Then you're going ahead and you're heating up your water for your sparge water. And what you're looking for after you've done your mash runoff is you're looking for the remainder of your wort volume. So, you know, whether that be 3.5 gallons, whatever it is, you gotta measure your main mash volume and figure out what you need to come out with. Denny likes to, you put yours up to, 185, you said, right?
Yeah, 190, anywhere along in there. As long as when you add it back into your mash tun,
yeah.
the grain stays below 170, you're cool.
As long as it's below 170. What if it's so far below that it's at 155? That's okay?
All right. Yeah. Basically, what you're trying to do by raising the mash temperature
yeah.
is, or raising the grain bed temperature, is to make the wort less viscous, which theoretically gets more sugars out of it more easily and increases your efficiency.
Okay.
It's one of those minor points. It doesn't make enough difference to freak out if it doesn't happen.
Okay, perfect. So you dump that water in there. You're looking for below 170. You don't have to let it sit. What you want to do then is stir it up. Just get it all stirred up. You want all that. You want, you're rinsing that grain bed. So stir it all up, and then you're going to do your Vorloff again. You're going to go ahead and recirculate. It only takes Denny a couple of minutes because of the bottom that he's got going on. But you want to make sure that it's clear. There's no chunks in there is basically what we mean by clarity. As soon as you get no chunks, you run that off as fast as you can, right? Denny?
That's it, man.
You run it off, and you get your full wort volume, and that's it. You're done batch sparging just after those two simple steps?
That's it. There's nothing else.
All right.
You can't make it any more difficult.
Yeah, see? I have to make things difficult, Denny. I'm finding it hard to believe I'm going to have to try it myself.
Yeah, I would like you to try it, Justin, and yeah. let me know what you think.
Yeah, I'm going to do so. I'm going to go ahead and give up my fancy little sparge arm that's a lot of fun to use.
You're so proud of the sparge arm.
I love that thing. I'm telling you, I don't know what it is. It just spins all by itself as soon as you put the water through it. It's real fancy.
It's very easy things that make you very happy.
Yeah, it doesn't take much.
Also known as a whirligig.
Yes, exactly. I love my whirligig. And I'm going to have a hard time shelving it, but I think I'm going to, for my next batch, I'm going to shelf my whirligig, and I'm going to batch sparge, and I'm going to come back and give a report.
And do a double crush, too, man.
You know what? I'm going to. Oh, although, wait a minute now. I'm only supposed to change one variable per batch.
Well, you're right. So try the batch sparging first,
yeah.
and see what happens, and then try a double crush with the batch sparge after that.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. See, you got me all excited because I'm, like, ready to change everything at once. Like, that's my M.O. I'm like, change this and change that, and I'm trying to get myself out of that habit. So I'm going to go ahead and batch sparge first, but then, yes, I certainly want to double crush the next time because I'm really curious about the difference there, too. So,
here's what
I'm going to do. When I do my batch sparge, I would like to, on a Sunday show, and we'll just do a brief segment about it, because people want to follow up about what I've screwed up next anyway. So when I talk about it, I'd like to get you on the horn here for just 10 minutes and talk to you about what I did. Can we work that out, you think?
Sounds great.
Okay.
You bet, man. Just let me know when you're ready to do it.
All right. That's what I think we're going to do, because I am going to batch sparge next, and then when we report, we'll get Denny on the horn here, and we'll talk about it. So,
sounds great.
The great Denny Kahn, homebrew royalty. He didn't name himself that. I gave it to him because it. I think it fits. The guy has a great attitude about brewing and really keeping things simple and brewing great beer on top of that. Denny, we didn't get to get into your recipes. Could you do us a favor? I've seen you on our forum there. You just got registered. Would you mind at least putting up that rye IPA recipe on our forum?
You know, I will be more than happy to do that, Justin.
That'd be awesome, because some of our users use the other forums, and I know you've probably posted them before, but a lot of our guys are strictly Brewing Network forum, and I think it'd be real cool if you posted your, because we did want to talk about some of your great recipes that people really talk about. So maybe put up the rye IPA recipe, because I know everybody talks about that, and I'm really interested in it myself. And maybe if you have your recipes elsewhere, just go ahead and stick a link in there, and let it, I don't care if people go to other sites to find them. That'd be great, just to find your recipes. Would that be cool?
Sure, man. I'll get it on there Monday or Tuesday.
All right, beautiful. Denny Kahn's famous rye IPA recipe. We'll put it right there on the Brewing Network forum. If you haven't signed up yet, there's a good reason to do it just right there. Denny, I can't thank you enough. I'm sorry about the trouble we had in the beginning there.
Hey, no problem, man. Glad we got it worked out.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounded great for the rest of the show, and I really appreciate the time you spent with us. I'm telling you, I want to spend more time with you on the air, so we're gonna keep in touch.
Okay, man, let me know. We'll do it again. It's been a gas.
All right. Thanks, Denny. You take care, brother.
Bye, Denny.
Okay. Bye-bye, you guys. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Now there he is, Denny Kahn, the long-awaited. We've been waiting to get him on here for quite a while.
How great was that?
Yeah, no, he's a... What a good dude.
Yeah, he is good.
He's a cool guy. It bums me out that he doesn't live like right around the corner.
Yeah, me too.
I think I'd hang out with Denny like every other night.
I bet you would.
Yeah, well, he should be hanging out smoking the
hookah. He is alive, though.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you don't know that. All right. Hey, folks, I apologize about those difficulties in the beginning. I hope it came out well. We got a good archive out of it, I think, because once we got the sound right, I know it's going to sound good, at least on the recording. So if you missed any portion of it because it wasn't sounding good or you were getting dropped out, I do apologize. A lot of listeners today, it will be on the archive, which I'll be putting up here just in a few hours. It'll be when you wake up in the morning, Denny Kahn's archive will be available to you, and we can just get it right there.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Daniela, what do you think? The first show without a full studio of hosts and co-hosts and guests, and how was it for you?
Much better in here.
It does smell better. The temperature's nice.
Mm-hmm. It's only you who stinks, so that's better.
Yeah. Less exciting, maybe, because people aren't like tossing beers back and taking their pants off and stuff.
Right. We're naked, though.
Yeah, you got that going for us. Okay.
I liked it. Can we not have them back ever?
No, we gotta have them back. No, next week, Dr. Scott's gonna be back, of course.
Fortunately.
Hey, I forgot to mention in the beginning of the show, Daniela, you know about this. You can check it out on our forum too.
Kilroy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it yet, the Brewcasters are now in our very own comic strip. For the first time ever, we've made it into a comic strip. How cool is that?
It's so awesome. I love it.
Go to WD, as in dog, MG, WDMG. It's very different than, like, WMA, WMDs.
WDMG, as in George.
Thank you. WDMG.org. WDMG.org. It's a comic strip called Where Drunk Meets Genius. It's a very cool comic strip. And the man who writes the comic strip has recently found the Brewing Network. And he's done, for the past week, a whole homebrewing segment. And then the past two comic strips have been devoted specifically to the Brewcasters. And they're hilarious. They're really funny.
Are.
It's awesome.
And they're so our life. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like Kilroy knows us.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's a cool guy and really jumped in there. So if you haven't seen those yet, go to our forum under Beer Radio. You'll find it there. It's under Where Drunk Meets Genius. Or just go to WDMG.org. And today's strip is a a Brewcaster strip right there.
Yeah.
So check it out. And it's a lot of fun. Sign up for our newsletter. I know a lot of you already have, but sign up if you have not already, because we'll be putting out the new newsletter this week, and I think you're all going to be real happy with it and pleasantly surprised at the work that we've done here. If your shirt's not available in our web store, you know, click the store button right on the homepage. We will be getting new shirts for you soon. We're going to order them on Monday. So if you didn't find what you need, hang in there. It'll be back.
What's Jamil doing tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is a Jamil show tomorrow,
yeah,
isn't it?
You better be here.
They're covering Mild.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mild. That's the topic tomorrow. 10 a.m. with Jamil and John. He will be in here doing the show live. Hey, good job on Daniela's World Vigorously.
Thank you.
That'll be a new segment every week covering things going on having to do with beer all across the globe. Daniela's World Vigorously right here on the Brewcaster Show.
Thanks, Justin.
Yeah, very cool. All right, thanks everybody for hanging in there with us, and have yourselves a good night. We'll see you next Sunday with the Brothers White, both Chris White and Mike White from White Labs Yeast Company. They're coming in here to dispel some myths about starters and about cold pitching or warm pitching. You know, all that stuff we like to talk about here.
It should be good show.
Yeah, I'm excited
too.
It'll be good. We got some friends in town from France too. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get them on the air and talk about French beer.
French beer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a blast.
That'll be a short segment. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week and tomorrow morning on the Jumeil Show.
The skies are gray. I'll take a Belgian brew any time, and the women sing the lambic fine. But don't you give me that American crude, boys. I want a real home brew. Home brew, don't you really love it better? Home brew, can't get enough of it. Home brew, it blows my mind. I love home brew all of the time. Yeah, I think I'll have me.